It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. Larry Maggott is here from CBS News Radio. Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief of CNET. And yes, the digital Jesuit, Father Robert Ballister. We'll talk about Facebook, that big breach, and privacy issues with Facebook. Elon's costly tweet, probably the most expensive tweet in history. And a big fine for a robocaller. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 686, recorded Sunday, September 30th, 2018. Older than the mini jack. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Betterment, the investing tool for those who refuse to settle for average investing. Sign up today at betterment.com/twit and get up to 1 year managed free. And by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage, from the founders of Carbonite, comes the cloud storage technology that's disrupting the industry. See for yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. Unlimited! Go to wasabi.com, click free trial, and use the offer code TWIT. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. And by Molecule. Molecule is the world's first molecular air purifier that reduces symptoms for allergy and asthma sufferers. For $75 off your first order, visit molecule.com and enter the promo code TWIT75. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news with some of the best tech journalists in the world. I want to welcome Larry Maggott. He's here from CBS News Radio.
Hey, you got it right.
Yay.
Our new name. We yes. used to be CBS Radio News. Right. Big change.
It's a subtle difference, but yep. important, I think.
Probably.
Thank you, Larry, for being here. We also welcome from CNET, Lindsay Turrentine. She's editor-in-chief at CNET.com. Always a pleasure to have you in, Lindsay. Thank you.
So fun.
She made the trek up here.
I did.
Larry Maggott.
I know. But I told you I couldn't do it.
Yes, because you have your book club.
Right. At Chef Chew's.
At Chef Chew's. Oh, you didn't?
In Palo Alto.
No, okay. Oh, yeah. That's different.
Right.
If there's Chinese food involved, I'm there.
Absolutely.
And you're doing the Crazy Rich Asians. So is right. that, do you choose a restaurant that goes with the media that you're...
Yes, because Chef Chew's son was the director.
Oh.
So there's a connection there. Even though it's... The movie took place in Singapore and they serve Chinese food, but they're ethnic Chinese people in the movie, so, and the book.
Perfect.
But I think it works. Yeah. And it was, by the way, very... The book, I have to admit, I kind of skimmed. The movie, I loved. It was a counter stereotype. It was great. I
have not seen it.
Enjoyed it. Yeah, you should see it.
I will probably see it.
I haven't seen it either, but my 15-year-old son saw it because the horror film that he and his best friend went to go see
was sold out.
So
yeah,
what
they think?
Crazy Rich Asians, and he came home and he was like, "Mom, you got to see it.
It's
really wonderful."
Oh, that's so sweet.
He's like, "It was romantic, but it was funny."
It was like Alien versus Predator.
He really was charmed.
Meets. Wow, that's great.
I haven't seen it yet, but I'm Asian, so.
That's Father Robert Ballister. He's not a crazy rich Asian. He's the digital Jesuit.
Actually, we changed our name. Now we're Jesuit Digital. Totally different.
Org.Jesuit.
Okay, org. CBS News changed our name.
Yeah. Father Robert's in town for what?
So I was here for Dreamforce.
Oh, nice.
Which is the big conference for Salesforce that shuts down half of San Francisco, 175,000 people coming in.
Was it
in.
Fun? You actually did a panel or something?
I did. It's interesting because everyone was talking about AI last year, but it was really sort of this, AI will be good.
Change CRM forever.
Exactly. And it's like, okay, buzzwords. This year, you actually had companies coming in saying, this is how we're using it. And I always love it when it gets to that level. And then we had Oculus Connect down in San Jose. So I had to come and get my VR on.
It was not fun for people whose offices are two blocks away from Salesforce.
I can imagine how horrible that must have been.
Awful. Also, somebody said I needed to raise my mic. Is it better? Yeah. I hope so. Okay.
So I'm sorry to say, if you were tuning in to watch Chang Chi Wang delete Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook page, he has decided to cancel that.
Oh.
Yeah. I have reported the bug to Facebook. I will show proof when I get a bounty from Facebook.
Oh.
Hmm. He's a so-called or self-designated white hat hacker from Taiwan who said he was going to broadcast himself hacking Mark Zuckerberg's Facebook page today, but he's called it off. Mm. It's kind of like the digital equivalent of Al Capone's vault.
Well, it's
right,
also,
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, I'm going to do something super illegal that everyone will immediately know is me. That's probably not the best way to do it on
Facebook Live.
No, don't do that. don't do that.
However, it isn't apparently related to the massive security breach which Facebook revealed on Friday.
This
is a little hard to believe, but according to Wired, and this is Louise Matsakis and Issy Lepowski writing in Wired, they found out about it September 16th because they saw an unusual spike in users accessing Facebook. Mm-hmm. Now, when you have 2 billion monthly active users,
what does an unusual spike look like?
It must be pretty big, but they probably, because they have so many users, have really predictable patterns.
That's a good point. Statistically,
they can probably predict it just down to the hundreds of thousands.
I mean, 50 million is a lot of people, a lot of accounts. But when you consider Facebook has, what, 2.3 billion accounts?
Right.
It's still a pretty small percentage of the people. I wasn't affected, as far as I can tell. I assume everybody was notified.
Here's how you would know. Let me give you the full story. September 16th, they saw an unusual spike. They had started investigating. On September 25th, which is, what, how many days ago? 4 days ago. Mm-hmm. The company's engineering team discovered hackers appear to have exploited a series of bugs related to that Facebook feature that you could, you know, you've probably all used this, where you say, what do I look like to others? What's the view as feature?
Which is actually a privacy feature, ironically.
Yeah. What do people see? Do they see my phone number? Or, is it? The bug is an interesting mix of three different bugs. The first one.
It's a bug sandwich.
It's a bug sandwich. I like that.
Yeah.
The first one, when you do view as on the Facebook page, it should get rid of the video uploader because you're viewing it as somebody else sees it, but the video uploader remains. Bug one. The second one caused the uploader to generate an access token that had the same sign-in permissions as the Facebook mobile app. So I'm, as a hacker, able to go to your site, somehow get the view as, get the uploader, get your token.
Right. So it's the persistent authentication that they're taking advantage
of.
And
when the video uploader did appear in the view as mode, it triggered an access code for, and this is the bad thing, whoever the hacker was searching for.
Oops.
Basically giving
anyone
the hacker the access code for anybody on Facebook. Facebook told everybody on Friday, and what they did is to protect people, they think there was about 50 million accounts accessed, but they were worried about another 40 million that could have been hacked. So they essentially reset that token for those 90 million people.
Right. So they logged everybody out.
They logged them out.
So the way you would know is if you had to log into Facebook again on your mobile
desktop.
I did too.
Yep. And wait, I got to ask you, when you logged back in, did you get a survey?
No.
Okay, because I got a survey on mine saying, I think Facebook is, and they had choices from wonderful, I use it all the time, and the worst one was a detriment to humanity.
It's like, what? Wow. I clicked that was on there?
That was on there. I'm like, wow.
I did not get that.
You don't
survey.
Give me that kind of loaded gun.
Click. I have no, this is just my theory, but I know people had already been bounced.
Right,
I hadn't been bounced yet, and then later that day I got bounced, which made me think that I was part of the 40,000, not the
40 million, not the 50 million.
But I don't know.
So as you said, Robert, that token can be used to basically log in without logging
in. It's you as Facebook.
And we saw this has been stolen once before. You remember about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, the Fire Sheep exploit that would allow somebody on the same Wi-Fi network as you to access your Facebook token and then post as you.
Right.
So this isn't the first time that's happened. It is not good for Facebook. It's probably the worst hack we've seen, not the first, but the worst that we've seen of Facebook.
It's very sophisticated.
This
and
is a
clever.
Revenue hack, though. This hurts Facebook because this is data that they wanted to sell. For users, though, it's like, well, Facebook was already selling that data.
Oh,
are you talking about the phone number issue?
No. I'm talking about what the breach would have encompassed. I mean, the worst part of it is the fact that they could have gotten the token so they could have accessed other sites that you're using Facebook as an authentication.
No, but if I get your token, I can change your password? Maybe I can't. Right. Can I change your password? No.
No.
It's really, I think about the other sites. Behalf, I think right. it's about the other site.
Well, right. that's the other thing. Many people use Facebook. Did it affect this?
Yes.
So Facebook has a single sign-on that you can use to log on other apps and sites. Yes. And this did affect that.
It did affect that, which is a huge concern. So if somebody's stealing the ability to log into another site and then can use that as a way to get in and mess with that site or that service.
Yeah.
That's the big
So it was a last straw for our mutual friend Ed Bott, who wrote on Facebook that he's going to be deleting his account at the end of October. And I don't know how many people, I suspect there'll be relatively few people doing that, but here's a guy who I think, knows a lot about tech, and apparently it's just enough for him.
I mostly delete. I mean, I basically, there's nothing I post on Facebook. All of the information, my personal information, is wrong. I put erroneous information.
You're actually a rabbi on Facebook, right?
Yeah. So, but why do you use Facebook if you don't put your stuff there?
The only reason why I use Facebook is because I need to administer certain pages. So it's tied to that. And also because I use it as a third-party authentication, which I will no longer be doing. I'm going to be moving all of that over to
something
else.
I never do that. I'm the opposite, which is that I use it to quietly watch what other people are doing.
Lurking. I like this.
Yes.
This
I use it as a lurking platform. Really, in the sweetest way. Just to see pictures of other people's kids or whatever. But I never use it as a third-party authenticator. For that reason, it just freaks me out.
I only do when I'm really lazy. If I'm really in a hurry and too lazy to type in a username, I might. But in general, I avoid it. But, you know, I use Facebook a lot to post comments, personal thoughts. I try not to be overtly political, but kind of subvertly political in this. I ask a lot of questions. And I also use it to post links to articles I read, write, and broadcasts I do, which get almost no engagement. People engage heavily when I say something personal, to some extent when I say something political, but hardly at all when I try to, you know, get them to read whatever.
Well, that's actually the Facebook algorithm. Yeah. I mean, Facebook changed this not long ago, and they're just nobody's seeing that post that you're doing.
Larry, the problem is that you're not paying Facebook. If you were paying them for the engagement, then you would get all the engagement you want.
That's probably true.
So you know now it's funny that this bothered Ed Bott so much to delete his account, because I don't think this, I mean, there are security breaches. Lots of companies have security breaches. This is the one that bothers me a little bit more. This is a Cashmere Hill article that appeared on Wednesday, 2 days before this. Facebook is giving advertisers access to your shadow contact information, not information you're giving Facebook, but information Facebook about you from other things. For instance, if you use a phone number for two-factor authentication
I hate that idea.
So they're taking that phone number and adding it to your profile. You can't see it. You don't know if you look at your profile. My phone number's not there, but they know, and they're using it to sell ads against you.
And what's particularly bad about that is they push that heavily on people as a security precaution, and it's a good idea. I mean, it's a good security precaution, but when they mix a security precaution with a marketing advertising gimmick, it kind of destroys something that's very important.
But they have an opt-out. Facebook does have an opt-out. They will take you off that shadow sharing list if you give them your social security number and your mother's maiden name.
Right.
So,
and send them nude pictures.
Right. And if you send them nude pictures, they'll make sure that no pictures of you ever show up on Facebook.
So this comes from research done by Northeastern University, Princeton University. Cashmere Hill says, I asked last year whether the Facebook was using shadow contact information for ads, and they said no. However, these researchers did a series of tests that involved handing contact information over to Facebook for a group of test accounts in different ways, and then seeing how much of that information can then later be used by an advertiser. And the way they did this is complicated because, you know, they have to see what information becomes available to advertisers by looking at the stats provided by Facebook about the size of an audience after the contact information is uploaded. It's complicated. But they figured out that when a user gives Facebook a phone number for two-factor, or in order to receive alerts about new logins to your account, in other words, for secure, good, sensible security reasons, that phone number now is targetable by an advertiser within a couple of weeks. So if you want to be more secure, you're going to have to give up some privacy.
You know, we did a know-how not too
long
ago.
That's true.
That, by the way, for me, is why Ed Bott should have quit Facebook, not the other one.
Right.
Yeah.
That Google ultra-secure privacy measure is looking better.
Set that
I mean, that's annoying. It's so annoying. But, I mean, it's secure. It's very secure. And you don't give any personal information to make it work.
You have to use a dongle or one of the YubiKeys.
Actually, in fairness, Ed didn't say why he was deleting Facebook. He just said, that they've squandered the last scintilla of trust I was willing to give them. So
lots of straws.
Maybe it is this.
Maybe. I haven't been able to do it yet, but I have removed the app from my phone.
Which I know
doesn't do much for my security situation.
That's what I did.
How much more battery life did you get on your phone once you've removed it?
You know, not a noticeable amount, but I just brought me a lot of sanity.
You know, one reason you get more battery life, you don't look at your phone as much if you don't have stuff to look at.
Yeah, so I find myself looking at Twitter way more.
Yeah,
it's sort of the like, it's like vaping when you quit smoking.
You're going to do the next thing. You're going to delete Twitter next, and then you're going to delete Instagram.
No, but you know what?
Pretty soon you're going to delete those accounts because that's what I do.
And then I just will leave my phone at home.
There's nothing on it to look at. It's like, what do I need a phone
for? I have a bot that runs in a container, and it has made my Twitter feed so sane.
Bot runs in a container.
So a bot runs in a container, and I mute, but it does all the blocks automatically. Mm. And I just gave it a couple of parameters to look for, and my feed has become so much more useful.
For Twitter or Facebook?
For Twitter.
You know the best thing to do? Just delete your Twitter account.
And
one of the reasons I say that is because, not merely because it's a, you know, a dumpster fire that draws your attention constantly, and I always feel worse when I look at it. By the way, that was what put me over the top. Better or worse when I look at these?
Always worse.
And I always feel worse. So that was enough for me to say, okay, well, I better not do this anymore. But the other thing that happens, especially with Twitter, is for some reason it makes people crazy and they tweet things they shouldn't.
This is true. Okay,
Elon Musk. Two words.
Oh yeah, Elon.
$40 million. $20 million
funding
a word.
Secured are going to cost him. Chairman of the board Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to cost him $20 million. It's going to cost Tesla $20 million. Mm-hmm. That's $40 million. That's a lot. $40 million for a two-word tweet.
Plus, they're going to hire a nanny to watch over him, apparently, to make sure he doesn't miscommunicate in the future.
Let me explain what happened here for those who don't remember that two-word tweet. This was a couple of months ago. Elon tweeted, as soon as I saw this, and Elon, this is not the first time he's gotten in trouble on Twitter. And by the way, it's not just Elon. It's a lot of people get in trouble on Twitter, right?
The president.
Oh, sure.
Everybody gets in trouble on Twitter. Eventually, you'll say something inopportune. And part of the problem with Twitter is it feels like it's transient, quick, you know, it's going to go into the ether, and it's preserved forever. Mm-hmm. So it's this mismatch between expectation and what really happens. You think it's water cooler talk. It's a quick bon mot. Instead, it's your permanent record.
With no context. Because
and
it's
contextless.
Very little context.
Right. So I'll give you a little context. Elon Musk's tweets. I'm thinking, obviously, he'd been on Joe Rogan or something. A little smoke.
I think this was before Joe Rogan.
But he's saying, I'm thinking about taking Tesla private, buying all the shares at $420 each. Now, I know you have a 15-year-old, so you know what 420
That would have been okay.
Is.
If you had tweeted that, that would have been okay.
Oh, I didn't think. Oh, the 420.
He didn't know.
Bull. Yeah, and the devil's triangle's a drinking game. You know what 420 was. It's a pot reference. So he says that, and immediately the stock goes, whoa, because that's more than it's currently trading for. Right. So a lot of people, short sellers probably go, oh, crap.
Yeah,
and long sellers go, buy. And then he tweets, funding secured. Now, that's actually what got him in trouble, not the pump and dump, which I think should get you in trouble.
Sure.
But 50 Cent, we talked yesterday, 50, I'm sorry, I have to say it like the 50. 50 Cent tweeted, he really liked this H&H stock some years ago, made millions of dollars on a penny stock, no trouble at all. SEC says that's fine. But the reason Elon got in trouble with the SEC is because those two words, funding secured, weren't true.
Yeah.
Elon said, well, I had talked to the Saudi royal family and they'd showed some interest, but he had not secured funding. And that's lie that got him in trouble.
Well, he's also CEO of a public company and he's supposed to know better.
A publicly traded company, you have to operate under
that. But it's ironic that saying 420 didn't get him in trouble, but funding secured.
I have a tip for anybody who uses Twitter. Don't lie.
Yeah, you can't.
I mean, it's pretty simple, right? If you use Twitter, it'll make you sad. But if you use it, if you don't want to get in trouble, just don't make stuff up.
I have a policy.
So what's getting people in trouble on Twitter?
I mean, among other things.
I don't tweet right back.
Sometimes it's telling the truth that gets you in trouble on Twitter.
Yeah, can you imagine if Steve Jobs was on Twitter? I mean, those late night emails that he would send to journalists. Can you imagine if that was on Twitter?
You know what? You don't have to use your imagination because there's one guy, we talked about this last week, who doesn't do this. I mean, he tweets, but it's very bland. Jeff Bezos is very careful not to give interviews, not to be in public, not to tweet. He has a Twitter account, and if you look at it, it's it's not him.
It's not him.
It's promotional for Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That kind of discipline is what you need in this day and age. And the problem with Twitter is it undermines that.
Obama did that. He had a Twitter account and was used very carefully, probably by his staff, and very thoughtfully. And then we have another president right now who doesn't hesitate to just sort of go on Twitter and say whatever is floating through his mind. And
I'm just curious, don't you think people who are Trump fans like that about him? Isn't that what people liked about Trump in the beginning? Yeah. He spoke his mind. He said truth to power. He wasn't mealy-mouthed. He wasn't cautious. He said what they were thinking.
Yeah, and he bypasses the media. He has a direct conduit to his base.
Actually, in fact.
But some of the things
By the way, I just want to point out, he absolutely did not bypass media. He used it as an amplifier for his tweets. Because if nobody reported on the things he said, but the fact that he would get media coverage every night during the campaign, he didn't bypass media. He was media savvy. In fact, if there's anything you could say about Trump, is that he, more than anybody else in the history of the world, used social media, particularly Facebook, and the mainstream media to his advantage. That was huge.
It was a masterful use of an echo chamber.
Masterful.
He absolutely knows how to keep all eyes on him all the time. Yeah. And Twitter, for him,
Twitter's a very good way to do
it. It's a great way to stop whatever news cycle is happening because all he has to do is pull out his phone.
I think, the fact that he's a reality TV star probably helped him.
Well,
it helped him. He understood how media works.
That's how reality TV works. You have you have to be outrageous.
Right.
Otherwise, you end up on the cutting room floor.
And I'm of two minds about how calculating he is about this, but he's certainly able to distract people from other stories.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, nobody mentioned that Congress passed a huge tax bill this week. No attention paid to it, giving trillions of dollars back to the wealthiest Americans. No attention paid to it. I don't want to be a conspiracy guy, but honestly, you could make the case that media is still being manipulated very effectively.
It's a tail that wags a dog.
It's the tail that wags the dog.
That's exactly what it is.
In any event, Facebook has. It's funny. It's like, of course Facebook got hacked. Yeah, of course Facebook uses your phone number.
Right.
This is the conversation we've been having about whether Facebook listens to you.
Yes, they
listen. Right, of course they listen to you. So, true story. The other day, my boyfriend and I are in the car, and I make a joke about old timey outhouses. Right, like that's not even a thing I think exists. But we drive by.
Does your 15-year-old even know what an outhouse is?
Well, we drove past. we drove past a construction outhouse, and I was like, wouldn't it be funny if there were sort of like retro outhouses,
like with a moon in the door?
Yeah, mm-hmm. and
the Sears catalog.
The next day. In his Facebook feed, he gets an ad for a retro outhouse.
No.
Like, that is not something.
Wait.
I've heard that accusation before. And that seems hard to believe. Are you suggesting that Facebook was listening to your conversation?
Why on earth would this person, who actually is not a property owner, get an ad for specifically a retro outhouse?
And it was verbal. You didn't. No,
it was
message
totally verbal. We were driving.
It's amazing. I've heard that before.
Oh, we've all heard them. There have been lots of them, and not just.
And you're
about
actually
Facebook,
sane. The other people
about
I heard
Amazon's Echo. There was.
Well, Echo, I would understand because they have a device. Yeah, but the only way Facebook would be able to do it is if you had the app on and it was sending data back.
It was recording
your audio.
I don't know what was going on, but I'm telling you, it was the weirdest.
We would have seen that because that's a massive amount of data.
I'm just going to stand up right now. And say, yes, of course, it's an amazing coincidence. But remember, life is filled with amazing coincidences. We're so bad at assessing
the
probability of coincidences.
So
I know, but it happens all the time. And there's absolutely...
ad targeting is more sophisticated.
For that to happen,
that's a waste
Facebook
of money.
Would have... To, I mean, what would that involve? Facebook would have to have the microphone on your phone on all the time.
Right.
And really good AI.
For not just you, by the way, for 2.5 billion people.
And it couldn't send back a constant stream because that would be noticeable.
You would know it immediately.
It would have to be smart enough to pick out certain parts of your conversation.
Well, the app has to be doing it.
Right, the app has to do it, which means it would be killing your battery.
Is it possible your son Googled outhouses later? Did he maybe went online and nothing about outhouses?
Nope.
Do you have an Echo at home?
This was in the car.
Do you have an Echo in the car?
Denise Howell's in our chat room from This Week in Launch. No. She points out Kashmir Hill's been reporting on these kinds of weird coincidences.
I have not had that.
people, you know, Facebook, this happens all the time. And actually, I think we have an explanation for it. But Facebook, Kashmir's reported, will say, you know, people you know, you ought to befriend. And it's like, that's the guy who's my biological father that nobody knows is my biological father.
Yeah, that could happen.
Stuff like that. It could happen.
Yeah, that could happen.
See, I don't want to be an idiot. I don't want to be the kind of person who says, oh, that couldn't happen. And it is happening. But at the same time, it stretches credulity to think Facebook's doing this.
I completely agree. And over and over again, CNET, other outlets have looked into it and reported that this is definitively not happening.
Right.
But yeah, that is a pretty huge coincidence.
It was just strange. I mean, seriously, it's a little creepy.
Even this whole conservative conspiracy theory that Facebook is, you know, banning conservatives, they can come up with data to make that case. It's not the case, but you can always find data to make a case if you're looking after the fact for some kind of conspiracy. Now, I actually trust you. I know you're sane. I know that you don't have an axe to grind. So I don't know where to put this particular coincidence, but some of them are manufactured because it's convenient.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
My ads are never well targeted because I told you about this, Leo. I have a bunch of devices that fuzz all my data, my location data, my search data, which means the
Just
ads
out of curiosity. Why?
Like,
do you
I'm
care?
Getting a bowling ad right now. I don't bowl.
But honestly, wouldn't you prefer to get ads for things you want to buy?
No, because then I might buy them.
That's true.
I don't need
it. You know, I will say.
Okay, so that's on Gizmodo. Let me see. I have an ad blocker on, so let me turn off my, and I apologize, Lindsay, in advance.
No, that's fine. I was just going to say that when I know this a few weeks ago, but when Instagram talked about its plans to launch a shopping app, that was the first time I thought, you know what? Good, because I love the ads I get on Instagram.
I have bought so much stuff.
This is why I don't want these ads.
The underwear I'm wearing right now.
Too much
Instagram.
Information.
I'm wearing Instagram underwear.
for a week and a half, I was getting nothing but dancing lesson class ads. And I'm like, which one of my devices is triggering this? It's like ballroom dancing. No, that's not me.
This is something that doesn't bother me, is having ads targeted. Because I think you get better ads for stuff you want. Now, you're right, if you have no willpower.
But see, have we gotten that far in the conversation where we now think, ads are good? I mean, I'm okay
with
that.
Ads are necessary.
I'm down with that.
They support free media.
Yes.
And you're right. I would. And, you know, and theoretically, if you look at the history of advertising, it's always been targeted. For example, you'll get an ad based on the demographics that the publication was trying to reach.
If you buy the New Yorker, you know, you're going to get ads for New York, you know, Bermuda trips.
Right. And back in the golden age of television, that's why certain ads showed up in the middle of the day when the new housewives would be watching. So,
Fox News is going to get different ads than you're going to see on MSNBC. Not all of them, but some of them.
Not as many as I thought.
Not as many, but
mostly
some.
They're for drugs for older people.
Yes. Number one ad category on television is ED medication.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for that. Who watches TV?
Actually, we have an ED advertiser, so I don't want to say anything bad against
ED
advertising.
I mean, ED. I was talking about Ed.
Ed.
Ed. That guy's awesome.
It's a drinking game. You've heard of porters.
But the point is that with technology, we can just do a better job. And,
that is the only irony, is that for all of this tracking, there's still crappy ad.
Yeah.
Oh, there are a lot of terrible
Okay,
ads.
So I see that. It's ads are inevitable, ads are necessary, so we might as well get good ads. That's basic what people
I'll tell you why I like that idea. I want to see ads that are relevant. A bowling ad is just an annoyance. It's
Leo,
not,
the three of us on this show make our living from advertising.
Exactly.
I do too.
Two.
Different way.
Because I'm going to see ads, so I want to see ads that are relevant. Two, I don't really see that as an invasion of privacy. The issue to me is not so much the way Facebook does this, although you can go too far. So, for instance, we know that Facebook does this, they sell ads against state of mind. So if you're depressed, you're showing depression in your posts on Facebook, and Facebook can tell this,
by the way. Don't they deny that?
They deny it all, my friend.
Yeah. Well, they don't deny all targeted ads, but I thought they denied that particular.
But you can buy ads. I mean, you have to look carefully. I don't buy Facebook ads, but if you buy Facebook ads, look carefully at the categories available to you. It doesn't say, would you like to have depressed people? But there are ways to use people's state of mind and buy ads against that on Facebook. I've been told this by people who buy ads
on
Facebook.
Well, that's what advanced CRM is all about. It's not just about targeting the ads.
And then
it's,
I have a little more of a problem with
it should target the
ads. Because that's hitting people below the belt. That's That is when you say, well, that's, these ads are too effective because, you know, I'm getting an ad that, you know, well, here's an example. This came to us I'm forgetting who it was. Is it the woman who works with Dana Boyd? I think it might be at Data and Society. Anyway, if they know you are bipolar and you're bipolar one, so you have manic episodes, they can target your manic episodes because it turns out people with manic episodes buy impulsively.
That's right. Mm.
Now, that would be wrong. Okay,
really
that's not where there should be a limit. If they give you bowling ads because you were at a bowling alley last night, I don't think I have a problem with that.
But why is that the limit? I mean, playing devil's advocate here. Why,
it's hitting
why
below the belt.
Why is that below the belt?
If you say I'm interested in, golf, I want to see ads for golf stuff. That's different than saying, but I have no control over spending right now.
To be fair, wouldn't any ad have that impact if you're having a manic episode? I mean, if well-targeted advertising is going to be more effective if you're manic.
That's a good point.
I mean, that's what advertising is. Efficient advertising looks for the times at which you could hit certain people to buy certain things.
You're right. All advertising is essentially manipulation.
Yeah. So, there's definitely a spectrum. And, if you had an advertiser who was saying, I only want to target manic people in their manic phase. That sounds horrible, but it's not that much different from an advertiser saying, look, I'm going to sell to golf people. That's
a good point. What if the ad were promoting a drug to treat mania? I mean, would that make it legitimate?
Because
it
that happens all the time. Yeah. That's what these ads on MSNBC and Fox are.
Right, but they don't know. Yeah. Well, maybe they do know that we're manic if we're watching MSNBC.
Well,
if
they're not, I actually have seen ads for bipolar.
I have, but also
for, you know, psoriasis. And I mean, I don't, right. Obviously there's, and this is, advertisers complain. There's that old adage. I know half my advertising work. I just don't know which half is. It's very hard to make your ads effective.
Sure.
I think that would be a good thing, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
For me, the line is when it slips into FUD. If it's selling on fear, uncertainty, doubt, then
I agree.
A great advertiser.
And that's what the editorial
is, half informative and half advertising. Right. Right?
Sure.
Yeah. When we do our ads, one of the things I think, at least in my mind, that justifies advertising. First of all, you're right. We have to support ourselves and it's free. But also we know our audience pretty well because of the nature of the narrow casting we do. And we try to pick advertisers that fit that audience that they'd be interested in. So that's targeting, but it's not targeting because we know something
about you.
That's
the targeting that's been done forever. That's been true of every publication long before the digital
age.
And
I only do ads for stuff I use and believe in. And so, I mean, I think we try to do this in a virtuous way. And they're clearly less virtuous ways to do advertising.
Okay, wait a minute. Hold on. Let's back up. As a group, what are the ads that we remember? Like, think back to TV, the golden era of TV. I'm thinking of Where's the Beef? That was a ridiculously famous and successful campaign.
Have it your way ad.
Yeah, Have It Your Way, right?
I remember that. I use that all the time in articles. Have It Your Way.
So wait a minute. Now, Where's the Beef? Who was that an ad for?
That was Wendy's.
Wendy's,
was it?
Yeah. Where's the Beef? The little
it's
woman?
Funny that we can't remember, though. Was that just for
Wasn't
beef?
That used in a political campaign, too? It was used by Bush or
Clara Peller. Where's the Beef? Who?
Walter Mondale.
Walter Mondale.
Got Milk. Check. Got Milk. That was huge.
Yeah, got Milk. Huge. What was that an ad for?
That was Milk. That was the Milk Council. A beef, it's what's for dinner. That was the Beef Council.
Right? Please don't squeeze the
shrimp. The guy who did that had a heart attack. So
that work well on broadcast, like massive markets, are the ads that truly speak to most people. Yeah. Right? Like you choose something that most people have to make a shopping decision about, that's where broadcast.
So can you not do that?
I understand people hate ads. But I also worry because I see, a lot of sites shutting down, firing people, a lot of journalists out of work.
Yeah.
We haven't got a better way to monetize free websites for sure.
No,
not yet.
And the few public broadcasting organizations we have in this country are getting cut and are having to also rely on ads. Even NPR and PBS are running.
Basically, they have ads now.
Yeah.
I mean,
pretty
frankly.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time when they were completely subsidized. But not anymore. But
let's take a break. I got to do an ad. Larry Magid is here from CBS News Radio. It's also a pleasure to have you always, Larry.
Always.
Lindsay Turrentine, editor-in-chief at CNET. who has to deal with this all the time, I'm sure, right?
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And the one person who doesn't need to worry about advertising, Father Robert Ballasaire, the digital Jesuit. He's got, actually, I guess you do a little advertising. Those big churches, that's advertising, right?
I do ads, these great ads. We call them homilies.
I guess you're right. So that, you know, everybody's selling something. Our show today, let's talk about betterment. I know one of the things you want to do is save. Sure, everybody tells you got to save for the future, whether it's kids going to college, your retirement, maybe you want to buy a house. But how do you save? You don't put in a savings account, right? Because the return on that is so low that you'll actually lose money just by inflation alone. So you've got to invest. But how do you invest? Now, I know a lot of us geeks are do-it-ourselfers. We think we're smarter than anybody else. Have you tried that? Mm-hmm. Investing money in the stock market and all that. Has that worked out for you? Maybe not the best way to do it. I've got an investing tool for you. Somebody who knows they have to save, knows they have to invest, but wants to do it better. It's called Betterment, the smart way to manage your money. It's the largest independent online financial advisor. Designed to help you build wealth, whether it's planning for retirement or achieving financial goals. They're helping you make more from your investments with tax-efficient investing strategies. It'll give you an edge. By the way, with the volatility of the market right now, these things like tax loss harvesting really make a big difference in your overall return. And Betterment provides unlimited expert advice designed to help you make smart financial decisions. Most importantly, and I really want to say this, they're a fiduciary. That means they work in your interest. They are not incentivized to recommend certain investments. They don't have their own investment products to sell. They work solely for you. And they don't work on commission. There's a flat fee. In fact, there aren't even any transaction fees. And I love that because of the kind of things that they do, like tax loss harvesting. Sometimes they'll be trading on your behalf many times a day. But you never pay more for that. You never pay a transaction fee. You get constant information. The Betterment app, just take a look at it. Constant access to information and tools that let you track your progress towards your goals so you can feel like a smart, savvy investor. And the cost is low and fixed. Find out. Investing involves risk. I'm not going to lie to you. That's true. But you want to do it, and you got to do it. You got to save. You've got to put money aside, and you want to do it right. Get up to 1 year managed free right now at betterment.com/twit. Betterment.com/twit. Betterment, outsmart average. Betterment.com/twit. I should turn you Block Origin on. It's apparently blocked a double click ad. I'm getting bowling too.
You go.
See?
We're both into bowling.
I think they must have just bought all of Gizmodo.
I think they have a Gizmodo takeover.
That's just a big buy.
Yeah.
They figured
that's a custom buy.
Everybody bowls. Who doesn't? Yeah. You should bowl. We should all bowl more.
It's a young man's game, Leo. I can't be bowling anymore. I'll hurt myself.
Bowling. I have a family joke in my family about how when I was a kid, my mom would always be like, "Why don't you kids go bowling?"
Bowling.
It was always the sort of wholesome, "Can you guys just go bowling?"
Well, no, they bowl today. They just call it Devil's Triangle.
Oh. Instead of saying go out, get some fresh air, your mom said go down to the lanes. Yeah,
why don't you kids go bowling?
All the bowling alleys around here are closing, though. There aren't that many bowling alleys
we
left.
We have one in Petaluma. Yeah,
there's one in Petaluma.
Awesome.
There's one in Fremont.
The Rockin' Bowls used to be the way to save bowling. I don't know if that's still a thing. Is it? Let's talk about, as long as we're talking about Facebook, Instagram. Kevin Systrom and Mike Krieger, founders of Instagram, walking out the door at Facebook, apparently.
They slammed the door behind them.
Slammed the door because they didn't like Mark Zuckerberg's interference with their business. Now, there's a lot of takes on this, a lot of hot takes. Ben Thompson of Stratechery, I thought, had a very good take in which he said, you know what, Kevin, you were never CEO of Instagram. You were a product creator.
Yeah.
But to be a CEO, you have to have a business. You have to make a business out of it. And that's what Mark Zuckerberg does. That's what he did, and maybe Kevin didn't like that too much, but that's what you do.
I suppose, but back to our prior conversation, Instagram already seems to be doing pretty well from an ad targeting standpoint, and I think the problem is that Zuckerberg wanted to take more of Facebook and apply it to Instagram, which those guys did not want.
Interesting.
That's what got Recode with implying that in a piece where
actually it was Kara Swisher in an op-ed piece. This was weird.
Oh, in the Times that she did
in the
did,
New York Times. It was an op-ed piece, and I thought it was a very good piece. But I just think it's kind of interesting to call that opinion. But yeah, she's basically let me see if I can find it because she's talking from her experience with both Mark Zuckerberg and Kevin Systrom, and. I'll read you some quotes because I thought it was a very good piece.
You know, I work with both companies, you know, through my nonprofit Connect Safely. In fact, we just recently published a revised version of A Parent's Guide to Instagram, which you can find at connectsafely.org. I think it's still on the front cover. And the companies, at least in the groups that I work with, which is the trust and safety teams, are different. They have different sensitivities about privacy and trust and safety. They're trying to merge them. But I think for Facebook, it's like herding cats, trying to get the Instagram people to get lockstep with the Facebook people. And I don't know, maybe that will change over time. But it's been my experience, at least, that there are differences in terms of how they manage those aspects of their companies.
Here's what Kara says. And by the way, the title of her piece should tell you something. A wise man leaves Facebook.
Ouch.
Ow. Kevin Systrom, a founder of Instagram, wasn't a team player. But Kara says that's exactly what Mark and Facebook needed. They needed somebody to speak truth to them. Mm-hmm. While it's good to be king, she writes, and Mr. Zuckerberg is that, controlling every aspect of the company from its many units to its board as controlling shareholder, it's not easy. Without the Instagram founders, it will be so much harder. So it sounds more like the issue was that, and she says she got this from insiders at Facebook telling her this, Systrom was an irritant.
Hmm.
She said when she had problems with Instagram, she texted Kevin Systrom and he responded to her. He listened. He didn't get angry. She said, that's the kind of thing you need a product guy like Systrom to be doing. On the other hand, she said, Zuckerberg, it would be nice if Systrom was still in the room to articulate that to powerful people like Mr. Zuckerberg. But now, just like that, he's not.
I don't buy the hot takes that they're out because they weren't businessmen. Instagram was making money. It had a revenue stream. It was growing.
Sure.
The difference is, and this is why it didn't mesh perfectly with Facebook, is for Instagram, for him, his users were his customers. He was selling
ads.
That's
the problem.
And Facebook, if you're a user, you're not the customer. You're the product.
Correct.
And those two cultures do not match well.
Can it also be the possibility that his stock vested and he got it and he said, well, I'm done.
I mean, yeah.
He had just gotten off of maternity leave. The first day he comes back, he says, yeah, by the way, bye.
Well, I'm sure that didn't hurt. He's a normal person.
He got his money. He's going to go to have some fun.
What he said is probably true. He wants to go do new creative things. That's probably true. I mean, at the point that business is right now, it's no longer really a natively creative pursuit.
Right.
It's now part of a business, and it's now about growing that business.
We all know people who are startup people. They love starting a company, maintaining it, running it, not so big into it.
Kara says he should be the chief executive of Facebook. I disagree. I don't think so. I don't think Systrom's the right. I frankly think if you're going to be Facebook, the right guy to run it is Mark.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Being a CEO is probably like being the president. It's probably awful.
The best quote from this New York Times piece, though, is this, and Swisher says she had a talk with Kevin Systrom at a hopelessly hip coffee place in San Francisco where I was left with one thought. One thing he said seemed particularly wise, so I asked him if I could put it on the record. Quote, social media, now think about this, it's a little hard to grok, but see if we can get this, is in a pre-Newtonian moment. So before Newton, we knew gravity existed, but we didn't understand why it worked or how it worked. We all understand that social media works, says Systrom, but not how it works. There are certain rules that govern it, and we have to make it our priority to understand the rules or we cannot control it. Do you think that's fair?
I think that that's really broad. I just guess I don't really know what it means, how it works technically, how it works socially, how it works with human brains.
I'll tell you maybe what he's thinking is, of course, Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook to connect and everything like that. It was used against us during the election by the Russians, particularly to convince people either not to vote or to stay at home mostly or to vote for somebody in particular. to me, that was the kind of come to Jesus moment where somebody figured out how to use social media, pardon me for saying come to Jesus, in a very powerful way. And they understood it, but Zuckerberg did not. And it took Facebook off guard. It's like, what? And in fact, at first they denied it even happened. Finally, they've, you know, of late basically admitted, well, yeah, that's what happened.
I think part of the problem for consumers is that most of us don't know how it works, right? We know that there are algorithms.
But do you think Zuck does is the question?
I that's what I'm saying. I would assume Zuck does, but maybe he doesn't fully understand it. That would be an interesting question because
that's basically what Systrom's saying. Yeah. We're in a pre-Newtonian moment. We understand how to pull the levers maybe, right? Well, but we don't understand why it works.
It's a great thought, and it's actually really good insight into the mind of a startup person. However, that last part of otherwise we can't control it, you're not going to control it. That's the thing about social media. It is such a huge zeitgeist now with so many different systems of algorithms that compete with one another.
But that's a huge problem because it's like saying, yeah, we invented a nuclear bomb. We don't know how to control it, but we got it.
Well,
yeah, that's scary.
It is scary.
Maybe this is oversimplifying it, but the thing that really kind of strikes me about this whole conversation is that what social media is just humans acting like humans.
Right.
And maybe we just need to step back and be like, okay, humans have problems. They sometimes are good and sometimes they're bad. And we have to be thinking about the bad impulses along with the good ones because we know that people will use it for bad things.
Right. And to that extent, neither Zuckerberg or Systrom or anybody else at a social media company can truly control what goes on because it's sort of like asking you to control what's going on in your chat room. I mean, to some point,
I gave that up a long time ago.
Right, exactly. You know, the mayor of Palo Alto doesn't get to control what everybody in Palo Alto does. And so,
in fact,
there
that's
is a
probably
lack of
a
control.
Very important insight that all politicians need to have and don't necessarily, which is you can't control everything. That's
sure,
not
right.
That's not what you're there for.
And some other basics like you can't predict the future,
right.
And you know humans will always do something you don't expect.
And that's political or a technological thing, by the way. In my new job, that is the number one question I get, which is, well, how do we control this? And the answer is always you can't.
Right.
And if you try to, it's going to be horrible.
You can put some guardrails in and you can try to anticipate the worst things that could happen and protect, but you still can't guarantee that you can, which is, it's kind of like the same conversation we always have about hacking. Yeah. Assume that everything will always get hacked.
Right.
You can't, you can try your best to stop it. You can stop most of it, but it will just keep happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's, of course, going to be relevant in 6 weeks when we have another election.
This
and already
true.
We're, you know, a DEF CON report showed that a great number of voting machines that will be used could be hacked remotely.
So easy. Oh, my God.
This is a book. I just read this article in The New Yorker. I thought it was really, really good by a professor of communications at the University of Pennsylvania named Kathleen Hall Jamison. She is, according to this New Yorker article, absolutely nonpartisan. In fact, almost humorless. At least that's how she comes off in the article. She wrote a book called Cyber War, How Russian Hackers and Trolls Helped Elect a President, What We Can't, Don't, and Do Know. And she at first poo-pooed the idea, as many of us did, that you could throw an election by remote control using Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But she did some research, and where it started for her was she does a lot of media research. She was watching the dials during the presidential debates. In fact, this book was originally going to be about the debates. And she noticed something somewhat surprising. You know, most people, most of the media watchers who watched the debates thought Clinton won them all pretty resoundingly. However, her research showed that during the debates, there was a small but significant drop in the number of people reported who had the intention to vote for her. And that furthermore, the debates afterwards, more people thought Clinton was less trustworthy than Moore. And she was puzzled by these results. She said that didn't seem to fit, you know, the research. I would not have expected this. So she put a lot of work into this. And where really open her eyes really were opened was when Facebook finally started releasing the ads from the Troll Factory.
Right.
The Internet Research Agency, the Russian ads. And she said it was very clear that Russia, in actually a surprisingly sophisticated way, was going for that result, that you don't trust Clinton. You don't trust Clinton. And she said the other thing that was very clear is it was synchronous. It was in lockstep with the Trump campaign's message, that the two of them combined in very clear ways to create an impression, however subtle but sufficient, to change people's mind in the election.
The truly scary part about that campaign was not that people can be swayed by media, because we've known that since the start of media. It's how cheap it was.
Sure.
It cost nothing.
Well, and to what do was
this.
Interesting was that people didn't, one could argue that that wasn't media, or right. that people didn't see it as media. It was media, but people saw it as, oh, this is just real people saying things.
Right.
It was people still thinking that Facebook was just your aunt and your cousin and your old classmate, when it's like, no, it's grown up into a full-fledged media.
And this Honest Ads Act, which I think is a good thing that Klobuchar and others are backing, isn't going to even come close to dealing with that problem, because it's only dealing with paid advertising. And what you're talking about is organic content that's being posted on these services. So, again, it gets back to how do you control the people, and how do you control the people who are controlling the people, which in this case could be bots controlled by foreign agents. So that is a challenge that I think Zuckerberg doesn't yet understand how to control. I don't think he knows what to do about it.
Well, and the real fear, of course, the worry is we've got an election coming up.
Very soon.
And we haven't put any controls in. Nobody seems to understand how it worked, and now we're going to do it again.
I'm doing what I can, which is I'm voting. That's all I can control right now.
Vote and don't, like, everybody uninstall Facebook. I don't know. I mean, don't look at it.
I'll be honest with you. The problem isn't you and me and Father Robert and Larry or Ed Bott or any of the people who are going to delete Facebook. That's not.
But if you don't see it. If you don't, I meant everybody.
Everybody, but the people who use Facebook the most are the ones who would be most impacted by it, and the people least likely to delete it.
Did anybody take the New York Times quiz asking you to see if you could identify the actual pieces of content created by Russian?
I had not seen that.
Influencers. No. It was fascinating. It was very difficult. You can take this quiz, and you can see whether you can tell the difference. And after answering each question, it'll sort of walk you through how you could in the future tell. You really have to work on educating yourself about what is real and what isn't in order to not be fooled.
One of these posts is from a genuine Facebook page that supports feminism. The other was part of an influence campaign from Russia. Can you guess which of these is fake and which is real? The first one, girls make rules and you follow them. If you don't like them, you live. End of story. Rules for dating my daughter. I don't make the rules. You don't make the rules. She makes the rules. Her body, her rules. Feminist father. Here's another one. My boyfriend thinks I should, quote. My boyfriend likes it when I, quote. My boyfriend doesn't want me to dump him. Okay, they seem to have the same message.
Mm-hmm.
Which one's real? I don't know. And I mean, is the point being that the fake ad was somehow effective in manipulating?
Well, the fake ads were often used opinion? To build up follower counts right. for an account. Mm-hmm. And yeah. then well, in also, the 10th time, they would do something that was political
and
reach more people.
Because you and I agree with this sentiment, we aren't necessarily the target for this. It might be somebody who so virulently disagrees with it.
Typically, if you continue to read in this, the target audience is actually usually people who do agree with it.
Oh,
and so what they would do is build a following over time, get them going, and then start to insert things that really would influence your opinion.
But these seem like they're the
very
same.
Similar.
Yeah. This is a really, this
nine,
is from
nine puppy and kitten pictures and then a political ad.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about this is I don't actually share stuff like this, but a lot of people close to me do.
And you can't help seeing it in your news
right.
feed,
well,
right?
I'm wondering whether people are sharing it who are unwittingly being duped into helping to spread propaganda. In fact, I'm quite sure of that, and which is one of the reasons why I rarely share anything.
But that's social media. I mean, that's what we do. You look for people who will amplify your message. It just happens that some people have
because I don't have the.
You know, if I'm amplifying a message that I know, you know, if Padre, you post something and I agree with it, I know it's from you, and I amplify it, well, that's fine because that means that I'm amplifying something that I know where it came from. If it's just some kind of meme or poster like the ones you were showing, you might look at that and say, yeah, I agree with that, amplify it, and it could turn out that you're actually promoting something that's the exact opposite of what you think you're promoting.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I could see that.
All right.
It's really
the problem with this conversation is we can't fix it. Yeah. I don't know what's going on.
That's scary.
Let's take a break and then we're going to celebrate a birthday. Special birthday. Ooh. Not somebody here. Oh. But somebody you all know. This Week in Tech, this week brought to you by Wasabi. more. Wasabi. It's that green hot stuff.
You get I love sushi, that stuff.
But that's not the wasabi. I'm talking about wasabi. It's hot, but it's hot cloud storage. Okay? From the guys, my friends who did Carbonite. They learned more about, they got the patents on how hard drives work than anybody. And when David Friend, kind of semi-retired, this problem with David Friend is he can't retire. He is a serial entrepreneur, and he started a new company. He and his buddy, Jeff Flowers, who was the technologist behind Carbonite, went out and started Wasabi because he realized there was a huge opportunity here. Data storage is big, to put it lightly. There'll be an estimated 163 zettabytes of storage by 2025. That's I think 21 zeros. Tons of data. There is a huge market for people who want to efficiently and affordably store data that's critical for business, critical to get the job done. You're going to store that data in the cloud. You know you are, but there are lots of issues. Wasabi is disruptive technology that's turning the industry on its ear. Now, I know if you're about to acquire cloud storage, I know the names, and you know the names, the big three you're going to look at. I just want you to add one more name to your thinking. That's all I'm asking. Wasabi uses technologies that result in storages 80% cheaper and six times faster. 80% cheaper, six times the speed. And they don't charge you for egress. Free, unlimited egress. It's simple. There's one tier of service, no charge for egress. You pay for storage. That's it. It's just as secure, in some cases even more secure than your local storage. I can think always more secure than your local storage. It's HIPAA compliant. It's FINRA compliant. CJIS compliant. Wasabi has this thing they call the Wasabi Ball, which means it's a physical device that allows you to migrate petabytes of data quickly, easily, securely. You gotta check out Wasabi. You can experience it yourself with free unlimited storage for a month. See, it says terabyte there, but if you go to wasabi.com and click the free trial link, use the offer code TWIT, you're gonna get unlimited for a month. See what you think. Wasabi, WASABI.com. Enter the code TWIT. One low price, no tiers, no egress fees. You will save. It's faster. It's better. I 11 nines of durability, redundancy, immutable. Oh, I love the immutable storage. You'll get this. You can say, this file may never change. Ooh. So if you're worried about ransomware or any data can get corrupted, you say this file, that's immutable. That's storage that's permanent, that's untouchable. This is S3 compliant. It's got an S3 compliant interface, but it's not S3. It's Wasabi. Six times faster than S3, 80% less than S3, and 11 nines data durability. And I love the idea of immutable storage. No charge for API calls either. WASABI.com. Use the offer code TWIT.
Wasabi. Now I want cloud storage on my sushi.
It's hot. Mm. It's hot. Google is 20.
Yep.
Can you believe that? 20 years ago, the official Google anniversary, I think was the 26th. I can't remember.
Yeah.
There was a special Google doodle. I mean, Google didn't happen all in one day, so but basically it's 20 years old.
I was teaching high school.
Were you really?
I was.
Do you remember when you first used Google?
I did, because before that I was defaulting to AltaVista.
Yeah.
Right.
What was your search engine before Google? You remember? Yahoo?
It might have been Yahoo. But that was
Yahoo
more of a directory.
Wasn't a search engine.
AltaVista was probably the one.
I think it was AltaVista.
It had to be AltaVista. That was it.
AltaVista. Well, there's Jeeves. There's Ask Jeeves.
Dog
Pound. That was sort of
Dogpile.
Dogpile, yeah.
I think it was AltaVista.
Dogpile was aggregating.
Right.
There were other ones. You don't... the names are all gone.
Mostly used Yahoo as a directory. Right.
And I started with
Gopher. That was my first real internet thing.
Oh, Gopher predates any of this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Love Gopher. There was Excite. Lycos. Remember Lycos?
Yes.
Do you remember
yes,
that? They didn't thank use you. It as much.
Isn't it funny how these names have just
gone? They're
disappeared,
just gone.
Completely disappeared. Right. Well, remember Sun was the dot in dot com? Because it was literally running like 90% of the internet.
That's true.
And it's gone.
Yep.
I love Denise Altavista. At least we should get you on the show. Denise Hall says, I loved Altavista, but I cheated with Ask Jeeves.
Well, Ask Jeeves was such a great idea.
It was.
And that's essentially right. what Google has become. Has cornered,
right?
But not explicitly.
Alta Vista was really just a big indexed with no smarts,
right?
No, Alta Vista had a search. It was Yahoo that was the index.
Yahoo Alta was Vista an index. Was Alta Vista had a crawler. Lycos had a crawler.
Right.
I don't ask Jeeves.
You know, that was all about natural language search.
Them,
right. That's what we.
What made Google so
to.
Special yeah. was its ability. Was this concept of authority, giving right. pages right. that had a lot of inbound links.
Right.
Authority. And that's really what made them successful. So I feel like Alta Vista was just, we have an engine that crawls, and if it has certain words, we return it. But they couldn't tell whether that was an important page or a high quality page or a lot of people paid attention to it. That's what Google did.
Which is ironically, because one of the things that's gotten Google criticized by conservatives is that it will surface very popular, highly regarded websites, which, by the way, often tend to be liberal or mainstream. But that's exactly what, you know, when you look at the chart that was created by, I think, Cheryl Atkinson about the left and the right websites and how Google would skew towards the left. Well, the left was Washington Post, New York Times, CBS, ABC, all of these highly credible sources, which would naturally rise to the surface of a Google algorithm because Google, as you pointed out, was all based on authority.
That's the currency in a search economy. You know, how many people are linking to you?
Still
how many
is.
People are using you as a source?
Still is.
It
yeah.
still is.
Yeah.
That hasn't changed in really 20 years. Actually,
the
what's amazing
aren't
is that
political.
That hasn't changed.
Yeah. The algorithms aren't political, but it happens to coincide with what people perceive to be a liberal, which isn't
spoken
necessarily.
Spoken is a good liberal, Larry.
No, it's not. Look. Just look at them right in front of you. I mean, no offense, but Breitbart News does not have the amount of inbound links.
Well,
as
maybe it should.
New York Times, maybe it should, but it doesn't. You know,
yeah, this is the same argument. In fact, Yelp. It's very interesting. I don't know, tech meme. Yelp started buying ads whenever Google's mentioned. Yelp buys an ad saying how horrible Google is. But anybody who doesn't get high in those results for whatever reason is going to say, well, there's bias involved.
Right.
And that's really the challenge, isn't it, for Google is to prove, to demonstrate that their algorithms are unbiased. But there's always bias.
Well, it is a type of bias.
Right.
It's not random. It's just a bias.
If 60% of the world thought that the sky was gray, it wouldn't necessarily, or let's say green, wouldn't necessarily make the sky green.
Right.
It's just the majority says it. And that's part of the problem with this. With this authority is you can have authority be wrong.
Yeah.
But now you have to categorize certain objective truths. And good
that's the hardest thing to do.
That. Right.
That's where Google's
right.
having real trouble with these snippets and factoids and so forth.
Well, and Google is constantly questioning and struggling with these things all on its own. And Google seems to be moving toward recency, the recency and frequency of update as a symbol of authority, which is very interesting because you can update something all the time.
Right.
That doesn't mean you know more about it. It just means you're putting more energy into it.
Right.
Google is the Thanos of the internet. It wants to snap, be impartial, completely fair, completely random. But we know that there's motivation behind that. There's the people who write the algorithm. There's the people who implement the algorithm. There are the people who actually look at what are the data sets that an algorithm can actually ingest. And you will never get rid of that, ever, 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 ever.
The human part of it?
Yeah. And if we ever got rid of the human part, we'd have a bigger problem because that means we're all gone.
Does anybody go to Google.com anymore? Because that's where Friday, then you would have seen the Google Doodle.
I don't as often because that's actually not my primary search engine.
What do you use? I know what you use.
I use Bing.
Bing?
I do. Wow. I didn't know that.
I use
Bing.
Bing is terrible. You like it? You prefer it?
I prefer it. It's my default.
Why do you prefer it? What do you like about it?
For the searches that I do, it actually comes up with much higher quality searches.
Interesting.
And it's not
so I started using on my Android device, I started using Edge for the browser.
I want to like Edge so much.
And so
much.
By default, when you search for something in Edge, you get Bing.
There's so many things they did right with Edge, but it's just missing that last 5%.
What would be a good test of this?
For Edge?
Well, just Bing.
Bing versus Google.
Yeah, what should I search for?
Something obscure could be one test.
I mean, like music or
the Dave Matthews Band.
Okay.
No.
Boy, that is pain. That is pain. Is there something you
want to share with us about this?
What you should look for is a topic and then see what sites it brings up.
That's a better
one. I look a lot at internet safety because I always want to see whether Connect Safely or SafeKids.com are coming up. But those kinds of searches.
Talking about the liberal versus conservative media or bias in media, let's choose something that would have a lot.
Well, I'm going to do Devil's Triangle.
Oh, boy.
You do whatever you want. I'm doing
Kavanaugh. Because those results will not be shown on the screen.
Might get excommunicated if you
look at very first result on Bing. I guess I should do this on the big computer. How do I use Bing? Oh, yeah, I can use Edge.
Bing.com?
Right. How does this work? I'll do this on, I think that Edge is using Bing. Let's see. No, it's using Google. Very first result on here, Fox News on Edge on the Android phone. On Google, Talking Points Memo, New Yorker, Independent, Liberal. On Bing, The Hill, Fox News, ABC News, New York Times, Reuters. So there is a difference. Now, partly that's because I'm logged in.
A little more neutral.
That's because I'm logged in, right?
One of the things I like about the Bing engine is that the filters are really good. So I can drill down, like, only show me news sources or only show me non-news sources.
When I do these tests, I like to use a VPN so it doesn't know where I am. And I like to use incognito mode so it doesn't know who I am. Yeah. I don't know if that's a perfect way to get the, quote, objective report, but it's, you know, so go to Indiana through a VPN or something and see what happens.
I'll do the location, but let me do an incognito window and go to Bing.
That'll help,
At least I won't be logged in.
By the way, Google and Microsoft, if you could, I would love it if you would put a persistent setting so that when I'm in Italy, it doesn't keep.
Isn't that awful?
I know, I hate that. You get everything in Italian.
How many times do I have to tell you that I want English?
Right. Doesn't it know that you happen to speak English, even though you might be in Italy? I know it drives me nuts.
Well, Google actually just announced that in part of their new set of algorithm changes, they are going to have in their news feed, which I think you get if you go to like the Chrome homepage on your mobile device. For instance, if you are a Spanish speaker in the United States, you're going to start to get results in Spanish and English. Oh. They've never done that before. They say that's coming soon, which is really interesting.
I would like that.
So here's Bing. It's got a I do kind of like this. It's got a timeline. It's got a little news carousel with Fox, but ABC and others. It's got I'm not crazy about. Oh, I guess these aren't tweets. Oh yeah, these are tweets.
Perspectives. That's commentary.
Yeah,
they're actually returning it and telling you it's commentary.
Yeah. Okay. So this is actually I think that's maybe I'm gonna have to reassess because Google I don't think does as good a job. Here's the news carousel, top stories. There's a little bit of Wikipedia stuff here. Then Twitter, which honestly, I don't think Twitter belongs in that list. Videos, guess where those videos, most of them are probably on YouTube. Oh, no, Mashable, CNN, YouTube. You know what? I think Father Robert, at least on this search, Bing does win.
I know it's an inside joke, but I have, over the last couple of years, I have found it quite good at what I needed to do.
I'm going to have to.
I like to spread around my internet footprint. I don't want it all to live in Google's house.
Right.
Smart.
That's a good idea.
It's part of your fuzzing strategy.
It's part of my fuzzing.
This is the Google Doodle you missed because you use Bing on the Google homepage.
20 years old.
20 years old. And they start.
You can buy a beer next year.
And the old Google page, which I love.
Oh, did you hear that?
What happened on Y2K?
So it negotiated to 14.4.
Did it? You could tell?
I heard that.
You're the kind of geek that would notice that. It didn't go the boing, boing.
I missed that sound. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to do that as a startup sound on my computer.
So it's going through the years. In different languages.
Do you remember when they did their IPO? And there were a lot of analysts who were saying, we just don't know how Google's making money.
Oh, Lord.
Right.
That just shows you why you don't listen to analysts.
My mother-in-law never forgave me because she asked me if she should invest. And I said, I really don't know.
That's what I said.
I gave her all the reasons why she should be cautious. And of course, she never, you know, never forgave me for all the money
you
she
really
would
have
made.
You really don't know, Larry. You really don't know.
Really didn't.
You really don't know.
I had some inside information, but it didn't help.
You really don't
I didn't have any.
Oh, you remember the Mayan calendar kerfuffle?
GIF or GIF?
Oh, okay. I get it.
Still not been resolved.
Oh, the selfie wars. No. Ugh.
How do you make avocado toast?
Why is avocado toast still a thing? Because it's delicious. Delicious. It's delicious.
Show me pictures.
What's wrong with avocado toast? That's a good debate.
I will say that I don't remember who it was, but I saw somebody tweet the other day a very angry picture of a lunch that they bought for a lot of money in Sydney, Australia. I don't remember how much it was, and it wouldn't mean that much to me, but apparently it was a lot. And it was a piece of toast.
With Vegemite?
No, with a sliced avocado and some cheese next to it, and that was their avocado toast.
Oh, no.
So it was served to them deconstructed for a lot of money. They had to assemble their own avocado toast.
Why is avocado?
Maybe avocados are expensive in Australia. I don't know.
Maybe.
Google will have an event a week from Tuesday at which they will announce something, probably a Pixel 3 phone
Pixel
or
3.
Two.
Almost certainly.
According to a number of people, including Kevin Toefel from AboutChromebooks.com, the Nocturne, which is the Google Pixel Slate, it'll be a tablet version of a Chromebook.
Hmm.
You see the keyboard, but that's made by Bridge. That's how we found, or how they found out, was Bridge, B-R-Y-D-G-E, which makes aftermarket keyboards, apparently had buried somewhere in its code this render of a Bridge keyboard attached to what? A Google Pixel tablet, perhaps.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll be very expensive because it's from Google, but...
This is a Surface Pro competitor, right?
Exactly. There was even a rumor, I don't know how credible, that it might even run Windows as well as Chrome OS. Wouldn't that be interesting?
That'd be strange.
So that you
Why
can manage...
Why would you want to do that?
What's the point?
Well, here's my theory about that, because if you... what is weird to me about the idea of anything tablet-related that's also a Chromebook is that... Usually creators want that so that you can create things on that surface. And without Windows, it's very hard to do anything with those files.
Yeah.
That's my only theory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my theory is that this is probably going to be the last OnePlus phone I have for a while. I love it, but the 6T won't have a headphone jack.
This annoys
you
me.
You have to have one?
I want the headphone jack.
Yeah, well, good luck on that. The Pixel 2 doesn't have one.
No, it's going away. So this might be the last phone I have.
It adds insult to injury. On the new iPhone, they don't even bundle the adapter.
No.
Yeah, I noticed
Because they want you to buy it. It is my long-standing theory that Apple has become a dongle company. Oh. I'm not joking.
They made
a lot
of money
with the dongle company.
Remember that? Yeah.
I just love when people show up to DEF CON or Black Hat with a phone that they need to use wireless headphones on. That's fun.
Oh. Snarfing. Snarfing.
Yeah, I don't have
all
any.
All the data points.
I don't have any phones anymore, except for my Note. The Note has it.
That's right.
Samsung still does headphone jacks. I hope they keep doing that.
And I know it's an old port, but it is such a useful port.
Old doesn't mean bad. Look at me. Old can be useful. I'm actually older than the headphone jack. Aren't I?
Is that right? You are?
When was the headphone jack?
No, come on.
I mean, they've had headphone jacks on televisions for a long time.
Yeah, but I'm
maybe older than the 3.5 millimeter.
Yeah,
jacks.
The quarter inch jack is older than you are, Leo. I'm sure.
Yeah, the quarter inch is definitely older than you. Quarter inch has got to be older.
The quarter inch jack was invented in 1877.
That's a little older than you.
Okay.
What about this 3.5?
But it was used in telephone switchboards.
You're right.
In 1878. I remember that too. Yeah.
Myrtle, can you hand me the Klondike 557?
Those were the good old days.
Yeah.
Let's see. Wait a minute. Miniature. Okay, the miniature. 1950s.
Really?
Okay.
Mm.
Transistor radio. That's right. Transistor radio. I remember that.
Oh, but see, that was a mono.
No, that's
a two-conductor. They didn't have the stereo.
All right, so I am officially older than the mini jack.
Okay.
That you find on most telephones, right? Or some used to find on most telephones, no longer.
We're all older than the Sony mini.
I think that my Twitter bio is now going to be younger than the mini jack. I am younger than the mini jack.
Mine is going to be...
Younger than the quarter inch?
Silence.
Quarter of the quarter inch. I get annoyed by the fact that I always forget to charge my headphones and the old headphones didn't require power, but wireless ones
ridiculous.
Do. And
it's ridiculous.
So I wind up listening to my phone through the speakers, which is horrible.
You're absolutely forced to buy wireless headphones. And I just
right.
don't.
And charge them.
And they're not that good.
No.
I switched to AirPods and I am going to grudgingly
don't
admit.
Don't they drop out sometimes on you?
Very rarely.
Oh, they drop out a lot.
And how
very
do you rarely. Keep from losing them? I lose things like that.
I don't lose them somehow. I don't
it's
know.
Amazing.
I haven't
lost them
yet, and I am really losy.
I put my I used a Brother label printer. Put my name Leo in big letters on my case because I do lose them. Also,
the thing that bothers me about them the most is just aesthetic, which is that that case looks like a floss case.
Yeah,
it kind of does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like I shouldn't be forced to use any particular technology.
Right?
Headphone technology works. It's inexpensive.
But you're forced to use
it's
headphones.
It's more reliable. Yeah, but it's more reliable.
They're generic.
It's a far more flexible technology.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is more reliable. Absolutely.
Amazon has donated one. I'm thrilled because I donate to Wikimedia every month. Not quite as much. Amazon has donated $1 million to Wikimedia, the home corporation for Wikipedia. And I honestly, Wikipedia is so incredibly valuable. I think you could make a strong case for it being the single best invention of the internet.
I was on our campus because I'm back in San Francisco, and I just realized that the freshmen coming onto campus never knew a world without Wikipedia.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I use it every day.
That's the research tool. Right?
I send them $100 a month just because I feel like that's paying for a research tool.
How skeptical are they about Wikipedia?
Not.
Or educated, I guess.
They know what it is. Way more than their parents do and way more than the teachers on campus do. But they know how to use it. They don't care how it works.
But do they care whether it's factual? Like, do they?
Right.
For instance, we were talking before the show about this devil's triangle. And during Brett Kavanaugh's testimony, when she said that notation is yearbook devil's triangle was a drinking game, the Wikipedia article was changed to say that it was a drinking game. Now, what I love about Wikipedia is it's self-healing, and it was immediately or almost immediately changed back. But I guess some of that depends on when you hit it.
It also depends on how prominent. It also depends on how prominent the story is. So, for example, when somebody changed my Wikipedia entry to say that I was born in Egypt— it took about 2 months before somebody fixed that.
Why?
I don't even know who did it.
Why
who
did
fixed
they do that?
I don't know why. I wasn't born in Egypt. My name, Maggot, could be an Arabic name, but it's a Hebrew
famous
name.
Famous Egyptian radio journalist Larry Maggot.
Apparently. I don't know. I thought, but you know, the point is that because millions of people don't go to my page, I'm not that controversial, it actually remained that way for quite a while.
And you're not allowed to change it.
Yeah, I didn't. I was actually clean about that.
Good.
I stayed in Egypt for a while.
You know, that's actually the changing faces of education. It used to be that we had to teach kids how to find information.
I know a lot of schools that say you may not use Wikipedia, which I think is a mistake. Yeah.
Well, which I think is a mistake.
Our school say that you can use it as a reference, but it cannot be your only
source. That's right.
And it also cannot be your primary source.
Right.
And so this
is
what my son is in high school, and what he does is uses Wikipedia to find sources.
That's the starting point.
And then he knows to go to the sources and click through. And he also has he may be a special case because his mother is a journalist, but he has a very sophisticated set of his own standards for the kinds of sources he uses.
For him.
See, that's the advancement of education technology, though, because it used to be we just needed to get them the information. Now we actually have to teach them, okay, you have access to unheard of amounts of information. Mm-hmm. We're going to show you how to actually choose what is usable and what's not.
Well, the most difficult to navigate is YouTube.
Okay.
I mean, and most teenagers and much younger children get almost all of their information from YouTube, and it is difficult to navigate.
Mm-hmm.
Really,
What do you mean difficult to navigate? Like how
it's difficult to know what makes somebody an authority, whether somebody on YouTube is an authority. There are a lot of people who speak with great conviction.
Right.
And very
we deal with that all the time. The guy who put the MacBook Pro in the refrigerator pretty much changed Apple's business unilaterally on YouTube. And was he an expert in benchmarking? Probably not. But he had a huge audience, I guess.
I find Wikipedia really useful. I had to repair my toilet a few months ago, and I was about to call a plumber, and I said, yeah, let me just go to YouTube and figure out how to do this. And it was actually very easy because somebody stepped me through the process. Right. And I find it very useful for that. But if I were looking to buy a toilet, I'm not sure I would rely on some anonymous person's recommendations. I'd go to
YouTube is great for how-to.
It's fantastic. No,
and you know, with all due I'm going to give a plug to Present Company. I mean, that's what I love about CNET and PC Mag and PC World and all of the other places where you actually get a byline
Catholic
of the review.
Church. Let's not leave them.
You know, in your product recommendations.
You're
you know, you may not agree with it, but at least you know who they are, and you can rely on. Hopefully that they're being honest as well.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's important to know that you can get group opinion, but you also can go to people who know how to evaluate something.
Exactly.
And ask them for that. I think that as long as you're
accountable,
you're fine.
The mistake probably on YouTube is going to the front page or using trending.
Using the algorithm. I mean, the reality is that you just go spill right into the next video and assume that it is appropriate for
you. But if I wanted to know how to cook baked chicken, probably if I typed baked chicken recipe in YouTube,
you'd get some.
I would find some pretty, let's see, look at this.
But without using Google, which is YouTube also, but without going to sort of a brand that you know, right?
Yeah, I don't know any of these brands.
Something with a rating.
Chris Cook for You Too, Original Naked Chef, Black Bossy TV, Patrick Erskine, they all have recipes.
It's hard to know if any of those recipes are good. Has anybody tested those recipes?
I would not eat chicken cooked by a naked chef. I'm sorry.
here's the funny thing.
Anything cooked by a naked chef.
About my YouTube page, and I think it's because I'm fuzzing all of my data. The only videos that ever show up on my front page are videos I've already seen.
Interesting. Oh,
I get no recommendations.
That's all they know about you.
Right.
That's it.
So, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff from Everything Great About. There's a series from Cinema Wins. There's a bunch of abridged series of anime. There's F1. That's about it.
I get 911 days of beard growth time-lapse video. I don't know why.
See, I would like to get odd recommendations like that.
Why am I getting 911
because
days
of beard
growth?
Because it's an around-the-world road trip and you've been traveling.
Oh, it's travel.
Oh. Yeah.
It's by the way, after day 410, that beard's getting a little...
Okay,
that's a great video.
No.
That video, where else are you going to see that but YouTube,
That's
right?
conviction.
900 days of beard growth.
Wow.
You're not
the Kavanaugh.
You think
it's amazing that his wife is still traveling with him.
It's like he could have things in there that we don't even... He's hiding rodents in there, probably. I don't... Okay, so that's why I got that. You're saying I got that because
we are on
travel.
A tangent.
So does it know about your Google searches as well, or does it just know about your YouTube
Everything
habits?
Google.
Well, okay, so that's an interesting thing. That actually comes to one of the stories that was a big story this week, is that Chrome 69 all of a sudden
starts signing you in.
Starts signing you in. If you sign into any Google property, it signs you into Chrome.
That's right.
Doesn't synchronize. You have to turn that on, but it does sign you into Chrome. And people got very upset about that. Matthew Green, who's a highly respected cryptographer at Johns Hopkins, said, I'm using Firefox. That's unacceptable. Google's response, by the way, was quick. And they said, all right, next version, we're going to give you a chance to opt out. But why were people so upset about that?
Because they see Chrome and their Google services as two different things.
But they're not.
They're not, but people see it
and
that
I
way.
Think
this is my
think,
browser, those are my
I
services.
I think normal users don't. In fact, Google, big deal a couple of years ago, unified all their services, right? The logins. You used to have a separate YouTube login and a separate Gmail login. They unified it all. They unified the user privacy agreements.
Mm-hmm.
That people weren't up in arms around that. But I think that, honestly, that reflected how people think of Google. And they log in once. They expect it to be logged in. That's how my iPhone works.
I have to say, I mean, it bothers me from a privacy standpoint, but I also am really, I'm so glad they did it. My life is so much better.
I'm the same way.
Really?
It really bothers me, and I will always disconnect that. However, it is one less technical support thing I get from my parents because they're always logged in now. Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. I mean, I spend so much less time dealing with this now.
But isn't that how your phone works? Your iPhone works that way.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Once in a while, my wife will come to my computer and want to get into her Gmail account. And we have to go into incognito mode because if we go to Gmail from my account, I'd otherwise have to log out and log her back in. which is great since I'm usually the only one who uses my computer. But the other thing, the only thing you have to remember is if you want to do something that's absolutely private, you make sure you log out and go into incognito mode. Just don't assume that anything you type into Google is private if you might be logged in or if you might be synced.
I think that's a great recommendation, but I am also skeptical about incognito mode.
Incognito
mode. We know it doesn't. Yeah. In fact, it doesn't delete cookies. Yeah. It doesn't hide you from Google at all. Really, right?
There's that great XKCD comic that someone goes into incognito mode and there's someone at the FBI going, where did he go? It's like, that's not how it works.
No, it doesn't have any impact on anybody who's able to tap into you. Absolutely. A VPN might or might not. That's where I'm skeptical. I wonder if VPNs are really as secure as the VPN companies claim they are.
See, I run a VPN through Tor and then I encrypt it on my side. So,
oh, you don't take any chances.
It also means that I do have 14.4 speeds.
It's so amazing because Robert is a priest. There's probably not a whole lot of secret stuff going. Well, maybe I take it back.
Actually, be careful here.
you of all the people I know have more privacy protections in place. And I think it's more academic for you.
You've got some great cryptography that I'm only starting to figure out.
Really?
Some of it's incredible.
There's like secret messages and stuff.
Stuff you wouldn't think of.
Have a long history. I doubt they have this.
When I meet somebody who takes such pains, I'm usually like, you don't have children. Because you have time to do that. It takes so much time to be private.
It does.
Remember PGP? People used to do these PGP keys. And I mean, it would just drive me nuts.
I do that. I still do that.
I have like two PGP keys that I think have been used 3 times.
Yeah, rarely. But, you know, because I publicly promote PGP and recommend it, I get I get email every day from people using PGP.
Right.
Actually, it's a bit of an upset lately because the new PGP for Macintosh, they're charging you. They said, you know, you can still compile it for free. It's still open source free software, but we're going to charge you $23 a year for support. And and you have to log into it. And which is fine. I understand. You know, there's no reason an open source project people have to work for free. That's fine if they want to charge. But I paid for it and I never got any login or anything. So now I'm just out $23 and I still can't use it.
But you feel better, right?
But I feel so good about secure privacy. Yeah. I'm so secure that I don't even, I can't even use it anymore.
You're like that one guy who paid for WSFTP.
Oh yeah!
WinZip.
WinZip. I am both.
The one guy who paid for WinZip.
I paid for both.
I'm still sending $10 a month to AOL.
Don't joke. I know people like
did
that
for years. People did for years. Yeah.
I just kept paying. Right.
One of my best friends in the Jesuits still pays for his AOL account because he's convinced that if he doesn't pay, they're going to cancel his email.
Take your money still?
Yeah.
It's not even off a credit card.
It auto debits from his checking account.
Wow.
What exactly does he think that he's buying?
He thinks that he has to pay for the email account.
He might. Oh, wow.
What does AOL think that they're selling him?
I don't know.
That's my bigger question.
Well, for a while there, didn't they have ad-free accounts if you paid, or was it Yahoo did that? You could pay and not get ads, I think, on Yahoo.
I used to do that. Yeah. I think I just recently stopped paying for Yahoo Mail Professional or whatever.
I might need to stop paying for Juno Pro.
Juno. I have a dial-up account with Juno. I'm just in case. I'm ready. I don't have a modem. But if I had to get one, I could.
You know what? I lost this in this move. I used to have an acoustic coupler.
I wanted
to take that with me to Rome, and I couldn't find it. I think it got tossed out. Oh, Larry's got one. It's like, one of those?
Wow.
It would be hysterical if you created a dummy office that was completely outfitted
all
with
retro
tech. Technology.
Retro tech.
Welcome to the Vatican.
Larry, let us see it.
No, I say you remember what these were?
Oh, my God, a Western Electric phone.
Dial, an actual dial.
I love the dials.
You know, you're not allowed to own that. You have to rent that phone.
Don't laugh. When I was a kid, my parents were in fear of the AT&T truck. Actually, a specific Bell at the time, because I used to buy phones on the black market and wire them into my house, which was actually a felony.
That's right.
At the time. Yeah, no, I could have been.
That went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Now, here's the geek challenge. The geek challenge with the rotary phones. Can you dial a number without using the dial?
Yes. Yes. And I know exactly. So I had a phone when I was a kid.
Could you do
when
that?
I was a kid, I had a phone that didn't. I can do it.
Yep. That's what it is.
I had a phone that didn't have a dial, and I learned how to do that. And it stood me well one day. Oh, God, I'm admitting another felony. Years and years and years ago, I was in SFO airport. And remember, they used to have the phones that you could pick up and call a rent a car.
Right, right.
And you could actually, they didn't have dials, but they had switches.
Uh-huh.
I could actually make free phone calls.
Oh, like, oh, you little hacker, you.
Yeah, exactly.
So that so that's all that dial did was just send pulses down the line.
Right. It was, disconnect, reconnect. Disconnect,
you're
reconnect.
One of the very few people that know that. I'm impressed. And a young guy at that.
Yeah. I'm a lot older than you think. Has I was actually born before the quarter-inch phone, Jack.
So I actually once used prank phone. I was in a gas station outside of Palm Springs when I was like 15 years old, and they actually had a phone with a crank on it.
Wow.
Oh.
And now I'm an old crank. So
you know what? We have one of those in the courier. They took there's a secret floor. It's not like
I'm telling you. You need
mystic.
To get an office. You need to get all this old stuff in there: an acoustic coupler, a crank phone.
It has a printing press that looks like it's from the 1700s.
Gutenberg.
It's got a crank phone with complete with the little comically weird. Yeah. Oh, earpiece you have to hold up. No, but this is an original. This is not a remake.
That's an original, right? John Jammer B brought me one.
Oh,
it's
nice.
An original.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have a lot of antiques. If you want to borrow anything for the Vatican. Well, you did take the steampunk computer.
I did. I have your steampunk
laptop.
Is that
sitting in honor in the holy city?
It is. It did make it over to Rome.
Yeah.
And
in
the
box
somewhere. It's probably going to go into the studio.
I think you should put that somewhere. I'm telling you, it'd be hysterical to punk people. They come in and you've got like, Francis is using it, Skyping on the steampunk laptop.
They have one of those really old typewriters, like rusted, that has the long throw keys. Yeah. And I want to turn that into a keyboard.
Fix that all up.
That would be awesome.
Wow. Let's take a break. When we come back, Estonia is suing. FCC is hanging. And one small step for the web. Tim Berners-Lee is up to something. I hope you can explain it to me because I don't get it at all. It's all coming up as we continue. We had a great week this week on the network. In fact, we've prepared a little video for your enjoyment. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
We are live from the Microsoft Ignite OCCC Podcast Theater.
What's going down in the OCCC?
Windows Weekly.
We get to touch the Surface Hub 2.
Did they show you the things that it did in the video? Remember that?
Yeah, So we saw and got to perform the rotation. It's neat, right?
It was.
I could almost picture people just rotating the screen arbitrarily just to watch it.
Know-how.
So then we've got the Nintendo Switch. I think this is really cool. You don't have to just play on your own region. On your Nintendo Switch, you need to have set up a Nintendo account that has, like, Japan as one example as the default region. And boom, I am in the Japanese version of the NES. The Japanese eShop gives you options for other games.
Oh, that's awesome.
Free demos of games that aren't necessarily out here.
Mac Break Weekly.
Which watch face are you using, Renee?
I'm using the Infograph because it's new. It's just so big. You need the big screen.
You really do. I mean, I don't know how much bigger the screen is, but it's enough. It's a little bit bigger.
But the important thing is they're band compatible, Leo. I don't have to fall into a fetal position and just cry.
We were all at least 20% expecting to hear the words, watch band dongle.
Oh, God.
Introduced.
Twit. Technology isn't always pretty, but we are.
Apple missed a bet there. They could have had a watch band dongle.
An extra dongle.
Oh,
that
man.
Would have been awesome.
What an opportunity lost.
Dongle opportunity lost.
Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans, the best lender, biggest lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction 8 years in a row. Focuses on the customer experience. When you get a home loan, and they know it's a challenge, right? It's a big deal. You're buying the most expensive thing you'll ever buy. You're writing the biggest check you'll ever buy. And there's a lot of anxiety associated with it. And they want to make it easy. They created Rocket Mortgage just so you don't have to go to the bank, you know, get all dressed up, pretend you have the money. See, the bank only lends money to people who don't need money. And so that's not going to work. So, no, instead, you go to Rocket Mortgage. You answer a few simple questions. You can do it on your phone. It's quick. It's easy. And you can get a loan in minutes. So that's a great start. But because of rising interest rates, it's not all. There's still some anxiety because even after you get that loan, there's some pressure. There's some uncertainty. Are the interest rates going to go up? Do I have to buy a house quickly so that I don't have to pay tens of thousands of dollars more because of the interest rates going up. So that's why Rocket Mortgage and Quicken Loans created the power buying process. Step one's still there, the pre-qualified approval, a few simple questions. No need to get paperwork. No need to call the bank and get your old check statements or previous employers for stubs. They'll do it all for you. And within a few minutes, you get pre-qualified approval. Then step two, within 24 hours, they'll verify your income, your assets, and your credit. Again, no effort on your part. They've got trusted relationships with all the financial institutions. Once you give them permission, they can get all that information. And then they give you this thing they call verified approval. Basically, you're now a cash buyer. When you go to a house and you say to the seller, I want to buy this house, you show them the letter or even the screen on Rocket Mortgage, and it says they're verified. They're good for it. They're good for the money. That puts you right at the front of the line. But here's where step three makes such a difference. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. You have 3 months where no risk of the rates going up. If they go down, they go down, and that's great. But they can't go up, so you win either way. This is exactly what you'd expect from a customer-focused company. They're thinking about your experience, and they're making it better. It's Quicken Loans and Rocket Mortgage, and you can get started very easily right now. In fact, set up the account if you're going to go home hunting soon. Maybe you're going to need a loan soon. Maybe you want to refi. Set up the account. Do that right now. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. And when you use that URL, they know. They only heard it on Twit. That's good for us. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. Rate Shield approval is only valid in certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. Based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records, equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, and MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. All you have to remember, RocketMortgage.com/twit2 for Rate Shield approval, the verified approval. I mean, this thing is great. RocketMortgage.com/twit2. You'll remember this, Father Robert. Estonia had those digital ID cards,
of
right?
Of course.
And they had a chip in them that had the fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
And it was provided by a digital security firm called Gemalto. You also remember probably there was a security flaw in them.
Yes, there was.
And Estonia had to recall every one of those digital cards, 1.3 million of them. They're used all over Estonia for services, for identity. It's a huge deal. And Estonia is so pissed off, they're suing for 152 million euros.
They should.
I'm sure that was really expensive to do.
Yeah, that's not going to cover what they paid for that system.
They said the Estonia Police and Border Guard Board said Gemalto had created private key codes for individual cards, leaving government IDs vulnerable to external cyber attack instead of embedding it on the chip's card as promised. It turned out our partner had violated this principle for years. And we see this as a very serious breach of contract.
Well, I mean, they were in use from 2014 to 2017.
Yeah.
The newest versions. And, I mean, they were used for everything. That's how you lived in that country.
And I was going to get one because you don't have to be, seriously, you don't have to be an Estonian citizen. You can apply for this digital ID card. It can be used as your PGP key. Mm-hmm. It can be used, speaking of PGP, it can be used as an identity card. That's very cool. I thought it was really neat. But you remember when we found out about this flaw, we talked about this on Security Now. It made them invalid, made them insecure. The FCC is hanging a $37 million fine on Blockbuster. I'm sorry.
Blockbuster.
I wish it was down.
I'm misreading this.
There was that one Blockbuster store in New York that had one video. This is what happens.
FCC hangs a Blockbuster fine over a robocaller, accused of spoofing real numbers. There's only one? Well, no. You see it all the time. It's called neighbor spoofing.
Yeah.
And I see it all the time. I get calls right from your, not just your area code, but from the exchange you're on.
Oh, it's the worst. I get those at work all the time.
And you have to answer, because what if it's your kid's school or a neighbor? Or you have to answer.
Right. Or in the case of my job, what if it's somebody I work with? It looks like it is.
Yeah, I just gotten to the point where if it doesn't identify who it is and it's not someone I know, I just don't answer.
Yeah.
I know that's not an option
anymore.
I don't answer.
I'm getting robocalls in Chinese. I have no idea why anybody thinks that
that's
think
actually
Chinese.
Extremely
use
common.
Microsoft Translate. It's, you know, very what the funny good thing is they're advertising for bowling. So the company was called Affordable Enterprises. They made, according to the FCC, more than 2.3 million maliciously spoofed telemarketing calls just to Arizonans alone during its 14-month span, selling home improvement and remodeling services. So I'm thrilled. This is a big.
This will mean nothing.
But we need more people to be fined and caught.
Wasn't it recently predicted that 50% of phone calls in the very near future will be?
Yep.
Look, the problem with that is you can hang a blockbuster fine on this company, but all of these companies are shells. They're limited liabilities, and they move from one to the next. So this company will under. The principals will still be operating 10 other companies.
Yeah, we figured out how to do it. First Orion, which provides call blocking services, published a study that found telemarketing spam has increased from 2017. In 2017, 2 years ago, it was 3.7% of calls. This year, 29%. Wow. And they're the ones who said, we think it'll be more than half. Next year, it'll be 45%, more than half within a couple of years. That's just you don't answer the phone anymore. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. My landline with 100% junk calls. I just finally said enough.
My parents
but now
kept
it's happening in the phone,
our, their landline from our family home, and I don't know why, because no one calls that except for telemarketers.
Yes. Right,
exactly. Nobody.
There is the idea that a landline might work better in an emergency.
Yeah. Which is not true anymore. Which is not true, because where they live, all of the landlines, even though it looks like a landline,
they've
it's VoIP.
Cut. They're all VoIP now.
It's all VoIP.
All
the
copper's gone.
Yeah.
The FCC does have a Truth in Caller ID Act they can use for this, which fines up to $10,000 for each violation. That's where the $37 million fine came from.
If you can find the person who did it.
Good luck.
Well, as soon as this is effective, what they're going to do is they're going to turn over oversight to the SEC. Because that's where it should. Okay, no, I shouldn't go there. Let me back up now.
It's hopeless. It's terrible. I don't know what you do. There is a brisk business in companies that block this kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Anyone who needs to send me something important knows that they should text me.
I think that's what the upshot of this is. And frankly, if I were the phone companies, I'd get a little anxious, because it really means nobody's going to listen answer calls.
Well,
anymore.
Here's what you do. You don't. You get all your calls on your cell phone. You let your voice, your visual voicemail kick in. Mm-hmm. And that's when, if it can't transcribe, usually I just delete it.
Yep.
So use this transcription.
Basically, if you don't leave me a message, I mean, that's the only way you can reach me by phone is leave me a message.
See, or I get calls a lot from like TV stations will call me to want my opinion on a big story.
It's very hard for people who need to answer the phone.
Right. Yeah. And I don't, they're often, it's just the individual calling from their cell phone. So, I mean, I know what CBS's exchange is, but I don't know what a particular reporter's cell phone number is going to look like. So I do answer, because there is actually the possibility it might be somebody I want to talk to.
You know what's frustrating to me? My doctor. Yeah. Kaiser Permanente, all of the call numbers are blocked. I understand why.
Right.
But but I don't answer blocked calls.
Right.
That's a good example. Yeah.
So I don't hear from my doctor.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe my watch told my doctor I'm dying. The doctor's calling and I'm not answering. Maybe. I did turn that feature on, though, that says.
So, Larry, you do answer your phone. How many of those calls end up being spam?
Maybe 20%.
That's actually not bad.
What I'm thinking of doing is I have Google Voice, and I can have Google Voice screen my calls. And if it gets to be worse, I'll do that. So they'll have to go through a kind of a pre-screen before they reach me.
They have to say their name.
Yeah, they have to say their name, which I think will get rid of most of them at that point.
There's got to be a solution to this. It's crazy.
But on my landline, it was 100%. I mean, literally 100%. It was like almost never was there a legitimate call coming on the landline. I mean, and that was a number that we had for 20 years.
At this point, the only time I've ever answered phone calls is if I'm using my phone when someone calls, because this thing is always on silent.
Right.
I called you the other day to tell you I wanted to contribute $20 million.
I have an African prince
on the line.
You didn't
pick up the phone, so I called the rabbi and gave it to the temple instead.
Yeah. What could possibly go wrong? Snapchat is offering to register voters through their app.
Oh, I feel so mixed about this.
Well, it's over anyway, because the deadline passed, right? This was earlier this week. It was vote registration day, the last day you could register to vote.
So if you have the glasses, can you vote twice? Is that how that
works? Yeah, no, you put a digital disguise on. They'll never know it's you.
That's problematic, but on the other hand,
that's how you reach people.
That's how you reach people.
Under 25.
Yeah.
Instagram did it too. Yeah.
But really, on Snapchat? Is that how you reach them?
Yes. And Instagram.
They launched a filter to promote National Voter Registration Day. Mm-hmm. I don't yet have numbers But the problem is less than 20% of 18 to 25-year-olds voted in the last midterms.
20%. That's the problem.
We need to get that number up. We need to make it cool. We need to make it hip.
Bernie would be president if they all voted.
Maybe we don't want to make it that cool. I mean, look, when most of our political discourse looks horrible, it looks like the worst case of humanity, of course that demographic's not going to want to have anything.
Yeah, they don't want to go near us.
Oh, yeah. But they never have. I mean, I don't think that demographic has ever been a particularly big voting block.
That's actually the thing that makes me saddest, is it gives people a reason to just give up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to get involved in politics.
That really discourages me. When I hear people who I respect say, it doesn't matter who I vote for anyway. It's like, that's the one little bit of power you have,
the most powerful political trying to enlist young people campaign I've heard recently was sort of like, look, voters over the age of, I don't remember what it was, 50 cast a huge percentage of the vote.
Yeah, you don't want those old farts to choose.
Basically, it was like, do you let your grandparents choose what you wear or what you eat? Why would you let them choose
your grandparents are running the Senate, obviously. If you
85, your great-grandparents. I mean, both Feinstein and Grassley are like 85 years old.
And she's running for another six-year term.
Feinstein looks like Galadriel, what she would look like if she had accepted the ring. I'm just saying.
It's a Hobbit reference, kids.
Ouch.
I'm sorry. Well, Lord of the Rings, Hobbit, that's all the same, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same. It's continuity.
It's Middle Earth.
That's a Middle Earth reference.
Steve Ballmer, remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's a basketball owner.
You know, but he has something else he's doing. He has a nonprofit called USA Facts, and they've launched a new voter center for the midterms. So I presume it's nonpartisan, but...
Unfortunately, it only works on Windows phones.
The idea is...
It does look very Windowsy.
It does, doesn't it?
Does.
Look at it. It looks like tiles.
All right. Look at that.
Let me enter my zip code and see who my candidates are. And then you could see... So these are the people running, and you could see how they stand on the issues from their public statements. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of cool.
It's not a great UI, though.
It's a terrible UI. But...
Maybe this guy had some sort of
Windows
background.
Windows Mobile comes back.
You know, right? It's kind of funny because this is exactly what 18 to 25-year-olds do not want to see.
It actually does look like Windows 10 almost. The old Windows, Windows 8, I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Is there like the politician store somewhere there? Download your favorite.
Donate money to them, or you take action. What can you do?
First of all, you have to scroll down to take action. Okay, scroll down, take action.
Okay, but let me start by I applaud the fact that he's put some resources into this. That's great, but that is a horrible interface.
Become a voter with Countable and Turbo Vote. This doesn't sound right either.
This looks like a scam site.
Countable.
It's like I don't want to give my information.
Get started.
Oh.
The name. So you just enter your name. It's, by the way, it's an iframe. Oh, Lord.
Oh my goodness.
What, register you to vote automatically? You can't register online, can you, with this?
I mean, it's awesome that he got a bunch of high schoolers to put together his website.
Oh, look. Some guy named Steve registered to vote.
It would be a better website.
Here's his video.
Hi, I'm Steve Ballmer, founder of USA Facts. As voters, it is...
Voters!
I was just thinking of that.
Together with our partners at Countable...
It reminds me of all those conferences I went to where he would yell at people.
He wants you to vote. He's going to tell you.
Why is he talking into the pause symbol? Come on, Steve.
See what you think.
That is horrible. You can't get rid of it.
Vote
three times.
Vote. All right. So no,
vote three times.
I didn't
Steve Ballmer
do
up
this
here.
To make fun of him. I did it to commend him.
Good for him. Good
job.
For him.
No, well
yeah,
done.
Seriously. Thank you. But work on it. Get someone to work on it.
He's just going to yell at you until you do it.
Call Matt.
That's
Cutts.
What it is.
Just call Matt.
And he's going to break my iPhone.
Yeah.
Yep.
Eric Schmitz. Oh, we talked about this last week, didn't we? He said maybe not. Eric Schmitz says there's going to be two internets by the next 10 to 15 years, the Chinese internet and the other one.
We've actually been predicting this on Twiit for years.
Have you?
The fragmentation of the internet. I mean, it's not theoretical. It's real. It's actually happening. You're seeing it every time a country says, you know what? We don't want our citizens to be able to access that information. And not necessarily because we think, oh, we don't want them to know the real world. It's this does not fit with our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you start to see that, the more it makes sense that China's going to say, look, we've got enough internet companies. We don't need yours. We've got our internet.
We've got her on Amazon.
Carson, why did you put this story in here from the Columbia Journalism Review? Is the podcast bubble bursting?
Yeah, I've heard that earlier.
Carson, why is it right next to your resume? What's going on, man?
Panoply, the podcasting unit set up by Slate, recently laid off most of its staff.
Yeah.
Said that now it's just going to be a distributor of podcasts instead of a creator of them.
Some big company. I mean,
on Wednesday, BuzzFeed announced it was laying off staff at its podcasting. Jeez Louise.
Yeah. And you've got companies that are just becoming aggregators.
Audible.
They're not going to make any original
laid off some staff from its podcasting unit.
Well, the thing is that not this podcast, but some podcasts are very easy to make. So I think that the podcasting universe has a glut of just people
there
who like to sit around and hear themselves talk. Which, if it's not, as you
not
know,
this show.
No, but if it's not, if it doesn't have wonderful producers like Carsten, and if it's not structured and reliable, and it doesn't have sort of a narrative quality, nobody's going to listen to it.
And, there's different levels of podcasts. There is the person who is just talking to a mic, and maybe you like the sound of his or her voice. And then there's actually podcasts that will try to show you how to do something or want to inform you. And they all get lumped into the same basket. That seems really unfair.
Sure. Yeah.
But I remember when I've been actually podcasting since, believe it or not, the late 90s, before the term existed. And for the longest time, we got no respect. It was a Roger Dangerfield of media, right? Everybody wanted video. And then Serial came along and suddenly podcasting. And Leo, you actually made a pretty big contribution to it as well. Podcasting suddenly became cool. And all these television and radio networks wanted to jump in. But I think it's cyclical, and I think it's been overhyped over the last several couple of years. And maybe it's a flight to quality. Maybe at the end of the day, we will have fewer podcasts, but better podcasts.
You know
what? That's what this article, and by the way, the article is by Matthew Ingram, who's a regular on our podcast. But that's what this article says. It's exactly right. And I think that's true. But that's always been true. In fact, frankly, I welcome this because a glut isn't helping us at all.
Right. Well,
there was also some very unrealistic expectations that were set up by companies that were giving these incredible numbers of this is how many people download, that A, most of them were crazy inflated, and B, wasn't really a marker of how effective it was in actually getting your message.
Absolutely
across.
Not, because a download, as we know, does not equal a listen.
Precisely.
And there's just no way to show that.
It's sort of like blogs. I mean, remember when blogs were the huge, big buzzword? Everybody was blogging. I remember John Markoff, somebody said, do you have a blog? He said, yeah, I have a blog. It's called NewYorkTimes.com. at some point, and some blogs did very well. They actually rose to popularity, and often because they deserved to be. And now everybody and their brother has one, but most get essentially no traffic. So
dead blogs. There's so many of those.
That's why I replaced my Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram feed with a blog.
I went back to GeoCities.
My blog is actually, it was, I think, in 1995 I registered larrysworld.com.
Oh, my God.
Still not super popular.
So my blog is where I put all my travel pictures because I didn't have anywhere else to put them. So I don't know. Nobody's reading them, but at least they're somewhere.
I can read them later.
I can read them.
It's beautiful.
It's
very New York Timesy.
I read my own blog.
But that's why Photos. Google Photos gives me
WordPress.
All my travels.
WordPress, it's nice. Which theme is that?
2017.
Oh, yeah. I use that on one of my blogs. Yeah. Smarterinternet.org.
And it has a nice big, I wanted a big hero image, right?
So that's a nice one.
Yeah, and every time you refresh it, it's a different one. It's not always the same one.
Nice. That would I have to take boring. Notes on how to do that.
Apparently, I don't remember either. There, no.
Nope.
Refresh.
It doesn't. Now it's like, no, it's you're stuck on this.
It's stuck on me and Lisa in Athens.
As professional podcasters, do you guys think that there will be some improvement to the way podcast data gets tracked that will help the industry?
God, I hope not.
Yes.
Okay.
Otter.ai. Well, not necessarily metrics, but Otter.ai, which is this web page, allows you to transcribe your podcast. And so you can actually have a searchable transcription of it. And it's not perfect.
Oh, this
but
is a
I've
great
been using
app.
It.
We use this app.
I've been using it a lot.
And
it's
iOS.
Yeah. It takes some work to make sure you fix all the typos. But if everybody did that with their podcast, it would be searchable. So at least it'd be more, more discoverable.
Also, I'm seeing a split. There's going to be those that are like the Twits and the other podcast companies that can actually survive because they're putting out quality content on a regular basis. But then you've also got the increase and the rise of the 1,000 loyal listeners, podcasters, who realize, I'm going to have a small audience. It's probably not going to grow.
There's nothing wrong with
but
that.
But I got 1,000, and that's enough for me.
There's nothing wrong with it. Essentially, that's what we are. I mean, it's a larger number than 1,000. But really, the only reason Twit continues after 15 years is because we have a very loyal core audience that just has stuck with us all this time. And they're not swayed. They're not seduced by these other podcasts. Or maybe they are, but they end up continuing to listen to Twit. And I hope they do. The issue that we face is that advertisers are starting to feel their oats.
Yeah.
The IAB, the Interactive Advertising Board, which is a big digital app. You know, I'm sure you're very familiar
with
it.
Oh, boy, do I.
unfortunately, they seem to represent advertisers a little bit better than podcasters, especially. Podcasters don't have much of a voice with them. And they're really pushing for podcast metrics. I don't want to do this to my audience, requiring your audience, for instance, to use an app that measures whether you listened. You know, when you buy a newspaper ad, nobody says, yeah, everybody read that newspaper from cover to cover and they saw your ad. That's not how it works. But for some reason, digital advertisers feel like they should know. And it's because they're given this false sense of confidence from banner ads where, oh, I know who saw my banner ad. Oh, yeah, right. And honestly, the only thing that should, in my opinion, affect advertisers is whether your ads work, whether you get results. Yeah, and if you got more... You made more money than you spent on the advertising, then that was a success, right?
Is that the reason why you and a lot of people give out a special code or a special URL
in media in general, that's always kind of how media evolves. When you first, for instance, when Tech TV first started, they call that direct response advertising. We've never done what's called cost per acquisition ads, where you get $50 for everybody who signs up. We've always refused to do that because I consider that devaluing. So we do traditional impression-based cost per 1,000 impressions advertising. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, giving out codes
the codes thing.
So the code doesn't. The code.
I'm sorry, whatever. I completely spaced. The code doesn't. Like if you use the code, we don't make more money. But advertisers use that to figure out. Are my ads working? And it's a kind of a problem for us because, you know, advertisers will use a variety of codes, but almost all our users just use Twit. So advertisers, every once in a while an advertiser will say, well, I didn't get any response from that show, only got response from Twit. You weren't on that show.
Yep.
or, you know, things like that happen all the time. So I'm not a big fan of advertisers, and I know they want this, but I'm not a big fan of them getting real granular about the metrics. And I really don't like the idea of them demanding. And Apple started to do this, by the way. Apple, if you listen in Apple's apps, they're counting you. And I don't like that. I don't want to see that be a requirement. And I would hate for advertisers to say, yeah, we're only going to count iTunes listeners. We're not going to count anybody else. Mm. That wouldn't be good for us for obvious reasons. Less than half of our audience uses an Apple product to listen to us. So this demand from advertisers, I understand why, but I think it's misguided. It's going to hurt advertisers. And really the only thing that I tell advertisers is, does this ad work for you? Did you get results? And we produce phenomenal results for all of our advertisers. And, you know, that should be good enough for them, right, if you ask me.
But see, that's
so I hate to see this push towards metrics because, I mean, we give you metrics. We know how many people downloaded it.
Sure.
That's better probably than how many people bought a newspaper.
But that's not a sexy saying. Oh, I got 100 million views on this YouTube video.
I get that. So when I run a nonprofit, and when I'm doing fundraising, once in a while I'll get a potential sponsor, a potential funder that will start asking for metrics, how many hits did your website get, and this kind of stuff. And we can produce that if they want to. We have to go in and look for it, but. It never occurred to me that you value a nonprofit based on how many hits their website gets.
You know, it's worse than that. I hope this is changing. Used to be, until recently in Hollywood, the amount of money you'd get to make a movie would depend on your Twitter following. So,
oh my gosh.
So if you're Casey Affleck and you have 500,000 people on Twitter and you're Ben Affleck and you've got 5 million, he's going to get 10 times more. And
then you end up being Batman, and that's not good for anybody.
And a Batman who kills people, so
that
whatever.
Half of those followers are Russian bots. They're not real people.
They're just bots.
So this is the problem with this obsession, and I understand it because you want to get efficiency. But this obsession with metrics, it's, you know, you probably, when you were a teacher, you would tell kids, when you use a slide rule to do mathematics, you know that you only have a certain amount of accuracy, right? You can't say, you know, three.
I saw one of those once.
Yeah, I have one in my office.
I always want to calculate.
Want to visit. But you can't say 1 divided by 3 is, you know, 0.33333333. A calculator will say that, but you can't be that accurate in the real world. Unfortunately, everything now is calculators. It's all computers. It's all high metrics digital. And it gives people this false sense of information, and they want this information. But I'm afraid they're getting the information, but it's not useful.
Isn't that one of the promises that we're making, though? We're saying, look, the reason why you should go with us over traditional advertising is because with them, it's shotgun. You're paying for time. With us, you're actually paying for engagement.
So that's what I think.
But then we, you know, they want to see if there's actually engagement.
That's fine. And that's why, so to get back to this history of direct marketing ads, when you're a new medium, for instance, when Tech TV started, almost all of your ads are direct. They're 800 numbers, or they're using offer code, that because they want metrics, not necessarily because it's cost per acquisition, but just they want metrics. As a medium matures and becomes network television, you start to see very few of those. You don't see direct response ads on network television because advertisers at some point say, well, hey, I'm going to buy the NFL. It's going to work, right? A Super Bowl is going to work.
Well, and it's often about advertising agencies impressing their clients.
Right.
So they want to be in front of the biggest.
Well, that's
events.
The funny thing. I mean, remember the DraftKings ads where they'd have a different offer code every time they ran that ad? As if.
What always cracked me up is when you're watching like a Super Bowl and there'll be an ad for years ago, an IBM mainframe. I'm thinking, how many people watching the Super Bowl are actually going to go out and buy
totally
a mainframe?
It's totally about prestige.
I know. It had nothing to do with
we had an advertiser, I don't want to name any names, that spent a lot of money with us for many years and then said, no, we're going to spend that money in the Super Bowl. And it's, I mean, literally over $1 million on one ad. And all I could say was, you know, jaw dropping. That was it. That was that advertiser left. And
it wasn't GoDaddy by any chance.
No, it wasn't.
No, but my favorite was Pets.com. That basically bankrupted them. That was it.
Yeah. I know the amount of money it's cost. It's incredible.
Yeah. So everybody knows in business, you got to advertise. The challenge is, how do you know that my money's working?
What's your ROI?
Advertising? Yeah. And it would be bad for podcasting, I think, ultimately, if it got very metrics focused, because that's not what podcasting's doing.
I remember the day when I used to write a print column for the LA Times, when nobody, including me and my editors, had any clue as to how many people were reading my column. I mean, they ran that thing for 20 years and never knew what my readership was because they had no way of measuring it.
Yeah,
and I don't know whether they cared even. You know, I was actually kind of happy about that.
Dvorak used to tell stories about Ziff Davis that they would do all sorts of tests and metrics.
Yeah.
And I think that you can get overexcited by that kind of thing. By the way, and a sad note, John is, after many years at PC Magazine, is no longer writing his.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
His Dvorak
column. That's a big change.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
He says it's because he's a Trump fan and the lady who hired him isn't. I think that's accurate.
That's just the industry's changing.
Yeah,
I'm hearing that a lot from my writers, friends.
Well, there was a time when he was a household word among tech people. Yeah.
It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Oh, it's all you youngins at CNET.
Isn't it? It's sad when you get over the hill. I'm not talking about John. I'm talking about me.
You're
crying about yourself.
After a while, you no longer have the name. People no longer recognize you. You know, it's all Marcus Brownlee. But this is
get off my lawn.
Yeah, you kids. But this is the way it is, and that's fine. That's life. You know.
Yeah. I have my retirement planned out.
What's your retirement going to be?
I'm going to sit in a cell until I die.
They already know that,
and that's literally what happens. It's not a cell.
That's literally what happens.
That sounds like
a good deal because you've got a guaranteed, and then after you die, you know, you're going to have some fun. So. You got a good deal, really. Yeah.
And then I'm going to have my remains turned into glass because they do that now. PR blast from that. They will take some of your cremains, they mix it with silica, and they will make a glass bust of you so that you can sit on the mantle of your loved ones for eternity. I'm like, that sounds
creepy.
Ridiculously creepy.
It's better than turning you into bullets.
I have such a dirty mind.
I want to be turned into bullets.
I say what I thought. Our show today brought to you by Molecule. You notice, by the way, how delicious, fresh, and clean the air smells in here. Even though Alex Gumpel's eating hot dogs just around the corner, that's because of our Molecule air freshener. It takes all of the pollutants. And by the way, most air purifiers, like the HEPA filters, all they do is they collect the the pollutants in the filter. In fact, a lot of times they don't collect all of them. They can only collect, you know, larger molecules. The smaller things like bacteria, mold, volatile organic compounds, VOCs from paint and, you know, formaldehyde from carpet, that just goes right through those HEPA filters. The molecule doesn't trap them. It destroys them. I love it's the Apple of air purifiers. It uses something called photoelectrochemical oxidation, PECO. It has this kind of a catalytic converter kind of for these molecules. It has a metal, you have to go to the website and look at it. It has a metal plate in there that attracts the molecules, and then it has a UV light in there that burns them up, destroys them. They're gone. It makes it, it gets pollutants 1,000 times smaller than those a HEPA filter can catch. And it makes it easier to cope with asthma and allergies. I know Lisa, you know, used to wake up with a headache every morning. That's why we got the molecule in the bedroom. And now, and I know it works because as soon as we leave, you know, go on vacation, she's getting the headache again from allergies. The molecule captures them. Lisa hasn't had a headache since we got the molecule. We liked it so much, we got one for our son. We got one for the studio. Molecules technology was funded by the EPA. It's been tested not only by people like me, but verified by third parties. University labs like the University of South Florida's Center for Biological Defense, the University of Minnesota's Particle Calibration Laboratory. It looks beautiful. It's so cool because it automatically will send off for new filters and whatever that metal thing is. It'll send off for those automatically. It's got a filter subscription service, so the filters arrive when you need them. You can connect the molecule to your Wi-Fi or your Bluetooth, control it from your phone. You don't need to. It has a button on the top of it. But if you want to, I love it. We love our molecule. That's why we bought two more. They sell out fast. So right now, go to molecule, MOLEKULE.com, molecule with a K.com. They reinvented the air purifier. You'll get $75 off your first order if you use our promo code TWIT75. TWIT75 will get you $75 off. Easy to remember, right? MOLEKULE, molecule.com.
I like to think that it destroys those pollutants with lasers.
It's kind of like that. I have, so it has a light, and at night we turn it off because we don't want to see it. And it comes on at 6 in the morning when the sun comes up. And you can, I feel like it's like a bug zapper. I know I'm not hearing it.
Does it have a Pac-Man game that's associated with it?
I mean, it should. I feel like it's like the light comes on and I just could you see this? The molecule.
Do you smell ozone?
You smell a little ozone.
Okay. That's what it
you
is.
You smell a little something coming off of it. It's all that stuff being burned up. Huh. It's amazing. Wow.
Can you control it by Alexa and by Google Home?
No. It's either on. I mean, there's silent. We run it in silent in the studio. There's auto and there's boost, which if like you've got a big room or you have, you know, somebody's just smoked a cigar, you can turn the boost on and it really cleans it out. It's amazing. So you're going to have to explain this to me because I don't understand it all. I read this today. Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web. He's a particle physicist. He was working at CERN. He currently is director of the World Wide Web Consortium. Is taking a leave of absence to create something. I don't get it. It's so there's this open source project called Solid. He says to restore the power and agencies of individuals on the web. I mean, basically his opening salvo is right on. I've always believed the web is for everyone. That's why I and others fight fiercely to protect it. The changes we've managed to bring have created a better and more connected world. But for all the good we've achieved, the web has evolved into an engine of inequity and division swayed by powerful forces who use it for their own agendas. Boy, in a nutshell, that's what we've been talking about all day.
This is the decentralization of data that's being used.
That's what he wants to do. So Solid's an open source project, and he's creating a company that uses Solid to... But to do called INRUPT, INRUPT.
I don't know, but I wonder if this is the long talked about idea that you are actually the owner of your data in the sense that you personally profit from it. So you can sell your data where you want to.
So the current model is you give your data to a company like Facebook, like Google.
And they're a broker.
And they're a broker, right. Yeah. This is turning you back into a client because Google and Facebook want your data.
but you get to choose who it gets shared with and what it gets used for.
Yeah.
The only way that you can keep that agency is if you have some sort of control over where it's stored.
And it's effectively a currency for you. You choose to spend your currency for a product.
Precisely, precisely.
But how, question is, once you transfer that data to another agency, do they then own a copy of it, or will they somehow, will your server somehow pull it back in if you decide to cut off your relationship with that company?
Well, I mean, see, that's the point of owning it. Since you actually own the storage, you are the proprietor of all your data, it can only be accessed by those agencies that you give permission to access that data. So if someone stops doing business with you, they no longer get access to your data.
But is that enforced by technology or by contract, by agreement?
Both. So the idea is it's kind of like de-cloudifying what we know of as web services.
So had you heard about Solid before?
I've heard a little bit about it, but it was always this pie in the sky. It's like, yeah, that would be a great idea, but are you really going to ask millions of people to set up their own web servers?
I created and interrupt what they call a pod, a solid pod, which is my data store, I guess. And it has a website. It has a profile, which I'll obviously have to add to an inbox, a public folder. And then they say, get the apps. The problem is, are there apps?
Not really.
And so that's what needs to happen now. In fact, frankly, this is why I wonder how possibly this could succeed. You've got to replace everything we use. The apps are coming, it says. You've got to replace everything we use on our phones right now, for instance, with apps based on Solid. Is that going to happen?
Not only that, you would need the big players. Facebook, Google, Apple. You would have to get them to buy into this, because if they're already getting the information for free, why would they suddenly change their model so that they have to contract with you?
So there has to be, the way that I see this working, if it works, is that there has to be some upcoming big product that does not exist yet that this partners with first.
Right.
And that's really the only proof of concept.
Yeah. And this is what Cory Doctorow has said, is that if you want to beat Facebook, you got to provide an alternative.
Precisely.
So, you know, maybe that's what this is the beginning of. The first steps, it certainly has a big name behind it, Tim Berners-Lee.
Right. The other thing is, if it provides data portability, so that if you can decide, I mean, the problem is, if you want to beat Facebook, the other thing you have to do is you have to have a critical mass of users and you have to gather their data. So if you could somehow get people to switch, kind of like number portability with cell phones, which enabled people to shop around different services, so you could actually switch from one social network to another and have your data instantly come with you. Which Facebook says it wants. I'm not sure it'll ever actually work towards that. But if some third party did that, then we would have true data portability.
In effect, I mean, this is what Google does for most people, right? This is what Google is for most people, is this repository of all information.
Yeah,
Facebook somewhat, but Google owns it, and Google does not hesitate to use it to make revenue.
And Google is not hiding that fact either.
No, they're wide up. I mean, they're saying, look, we're going to give you.
Yeah, we give you these services in exchange. You let us sell your data.
Yep.
So
you remember Leo paying money for MCI mail? You pay like 40 cents every time you'd send an email.
Yeah.
So think of what Gmail is actually worth. What would it cost to actually pay for Gmail? It would be many dollars a year.
Right.
Oh, sure.
At least $100 a year.
I would pay a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I mentioned this only because I wasn't completely clear about what it was. Thank you for explaining it. And because I think people should know about it so that they could, I don't know, set up a solid pod. It's better than Tide Pods. And maybe if there's some, you know, what you need, of course, and this is the really hard
thing.
Maybe
we can get the Twit Army to do the solid pod challenge.
Only on YouTube. Only on YouTube. So there's a login to it.
The structure is interesting. I love the idea. I just don't see a buy-in at any point in the near future.
It has to be necessary or people won't do it at scale. Well, there will be some people who will try it because it's interesting.
Work for a top-down organization. Why don't you just mandate it?
I'm still trying to get people to wear like regular clothes. So as soon as I got that covered, I'll come back to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of this fabulous program. You guys are great. Larry Magid, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure.
CBS News Radio, connectsafely.org, at Larry Magid on Twitter. Anything you want to plug?
No, just, you know, I've got my review of the iPhone SX Max. We never talked about that. I thought that was on the agenda.
It was. You know, do you like it?
Yeah, I do. I think the camera is really good. I mean, I actually have a Pixel 2, and a lot of people say the Pixel 2 has a better camera.
Yeah.
I actually thought that the iPhone XS Max had a great camera. So I do like it. I'm still love Android.
That was a name not designed for you. I just got to tell you.
iPhone XS Max.
I have my cryptographer, you have your XS Max. Yeah, I like it a lot. I don't know. I think the cameras are so good these days, it's hard to say one's better than the other. They're all good. I can't wait to see what the Pixel 3 does in a week. But
right, exactly.
I use both, and I'll probably keep using
them. Anyway, my review's on LarryTheWorld.com if you want to look.
There you go. Lindsay Turretine, are you going to get the new iPhone? I see you still have a home button.
I still have a home button. I have an 8 Plus. No, the answer is no, I am not. Although I do, we have a great article on why you should wait around for the XR. Right.
Yeah, to me, the XR might be the real phone to get, right?
That's something that Scott Stein, who reviews the iPhone for us, has written a lot about. Just
I've been
that
saying the same thing.
That it stands to be a very interesting phone, partially because it is actually, the screen is larger.
Right.
Than the XS,
right.
Which he pronounces like tennis.
Tennis or XS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's sort of interesting. I could talk about this for a while, but the other interesting thing about the new phones, and the only thing at this moment that would drive me to get the XS, is that we did the drop test on it that we do all the time.
Yes.
And
It
would not break.
You can't break it.
No, we couldn't break it. We seriously, we tried hard. We've broken it every time in the past. We could not break it. And I looked at that exact phone after she did that test. I held it in my hand. It was barely scratched.
That's pretty impressive.
And that, if I could have any phone without a case, it would cause me to buy that phone.
I tried doing drop tests on iPhones, but then they kicked me out of the Apple store.
You'll find Lindsay and her fine work at CNET.com. She's editor-in-chief. She's a big shot there. Thank you, Lindsay. It's great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Always fun. And Father Robert Ballasier, who was in town for a couple of conferences. We didn't even get to talk about the Oculus conference. There was a lot to talk about this week, but we did it on the new Screensavers. You can watch that. He was my co-host.
Save your
yesterday.
Money for the Project Santa Cruz, which is called the Oculus Quest.
That's going to be huge.
Yeah.
But that's not till next year.
That's probably April. Would be my guess.
Okay. Yeah. We thank you all for being here. We do This Week in Tech every Sunday evening around 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. If you want to watch live, you can at twit.tv live. If you're going to be in Northern California, come by and say hi. We had a great studio audience. Thank you. At least one long-suffering spouse. But, that almost always is the case. Just email tickets at twit.tv. There's no charge. We'll put a chair out for you. If you can't watch or visit us live, you can always get on-demand versions of all the shows we do. Our website is twit.tv. And, the other way to do it is subscribe. And I don't care if you use Apple's podcast or Stitcher or Slack or Overcast or Undercast or Pocket Casts or In My Pants Cast. Just get it, subscribe it, and that way you'll get it every week the minute it's available, and you'll never miss an episode. You'll have it in time for your Monday morning commute. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye.
This is amazing.
Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit.